So that's not a good movie.
Yeah,
so.
It is. Yeah, it's a good movie. No, it's not a good movie at all. You didn't get it. That's fine.
No, I did get it. I saw it.
No, you're not one of the chosen people who understands this.
I saw that movie.
Nope.
I saw it.
Maybe I'm one of the special ones who gets it. That's fine.
I think you're special, all right, for liking it.
No, it's fine. If you don't get it, that's all right. I mean, I don't pity you. I mean, you've got other things in your life, so it's fine.
I wouldn't advise you to from your rather rocky...
Why don't you marry Whit Stillman? You love him so much. Welcome to Sneaky Dragon. I'm Ian Boothby.
And I'm David Dedrick.
And hey, thanks for joining us yet again on our 282nd episode. What have we got left to talk about after all that time? Nothing.
Nothing.
We're dry.
Tapped
we're dry
out.
As the desert. Yep, we are as tapped out as the Simpsons tapped out game is tapped out. Which isn't really tapped out because they keep adding stuff to it.
I thought you were going to say as tapped out as the Simpsons are tapped out.
Oh, well, as I work for the Simpsons. No, I wouldn't. Do you want a badmouth garage doors?
Fuck them.
Yeah, okay. There
I'm
we go.
Out of work.
All right.
What do I care?
Oh, well, you don't have to sign a
legal... I don't even have a garage door. I have a carport.
Now, that is strange. Mm. I think you really should get a garage door. No. You'd get probably a good deal on one, right?
Yes, I would get a good deal on one after I've been there for a year, I believe. Or no, I guess I've been there for a year. But no, I'm not... I think because if we got a garage door, it would only encourage us to put more stuff into the garage and then move the car out of the garage... down the driveway, mm-hmm. and just have one more area full of things.
Understood. Yeah, so that makes sense.
It already is kind of packed on the end of it, where right. we've got a lot of boxes and chests and things.
Here's what I would suggest, is that you use your discount on your garage door that you're not going to use.
Yep.
Okay, get a garage door.
Mm-hmm.
Paint a big sneaky dragon on it, and we give that away as a prize.
Is that right?
And you know what kind of prize? Door prize. It's a literal door prize.
Nice.
Yeah, and then we'd find out if our listeners live in houses or apartments.
Ah.
And maybe they live in apartments, but they want a big garage door
anyway.
Guarding their apartment door, and then people will walk up to it and go, what the hell? And it'll discourage people from knocking on the door and bothering them in the middle of the day,
sure.
like I've been getting lately since it's election season.
Oh, are you getting that?
Yeah. Hi, would you like to hear about... No, I wouldn't. I'm good, thanks.
One of the dangers of being at home.
Mm-hmm.
We have not got that. I do not ever get any visitors at home.
But you do answer the phone to strangers.
I do. We got actually got a phone call informing us that we have been moved. We say Aldergrove is part of Langley.
Mm-hmm.
Langley is a municipality that allows, actually we're part of a township, that allows its various areas, well, its older areas, to call themselves by their
racist names.
Not racist names. Is Aldergrove a racist name?
Sure.
Okay. Racist against alders?
Yeah.
Aldergrave is what it used to be called.
It's against Druids.
Against Druids. And so so we're Aldergrove, but we're part of Langley.
Sure.
Only our riding, we are no longer in Langley in our riding. We are now part of Abbotsford, our next door city, which is weird because now our representative who represents us can do nothing for us in terms of our, like in terms of as a municipal thing, you know, like.
Right. Whereas do you have access to the air show then or get discounts or anything?
No, you don't get anything. You get dick all for whoever represents you. You know how it works. So yeah, it's interesting. They called us to tell us this. The Liberal candidate called to tell us that we were now part of Abbotsford. And then they said, can we count on your vote? And I said, well, to be frank, we wouldn't vote for the Liberals if it would save our lives. And the lady actually kind of chuckled. She wasn't like offended by my answer. I think because I was kind of being a goof before we got to that question.
And you mentioned to her that you're wearing a clown nose at the time.
I did not mention that, but I was. I did not mention it. But she took it in good stead.
As you did. And well, what's she going to do? She's going to go, well, fuck yourself. What's she going to do?
I don't think that would help her either. But no, it wasn't just like a laugh like, oh, I've heard this before. It was more like a, that's kind of, you know, like an actual laugh of pleasure. It was very strange.
They've probably been getting a bad time from people
I think
day.
So. And I wasn't being mean or anything.
And I'm not mean to the people at the door either. I actually do appreciate that they care about, you know, things enough to get involved in this. I mean, good for you not being apathetic. I hate a knock on the door, you know, because who isn't doing something?
Yeah.
Even if you're doing nothing, that's nothing that needs doing, you know, and nothing doing with the people knocking on the door is what I say to them.
Yeah.
So please, as opposed to what they've told you to do with the Three's Company theme song, do not knock on our door.
You won't be waiting for them?
No. Is that how it goes? Come and knock on our door. We'll be waiting for you. I believe that is.
I believe I'm right.
And your phone just went off, so do you need...
Is that my phone?
Are you cheating on us with another podcast? Is this what's happening?
It's just Amazon letting me know that they have things I might be interested in.
Oh, nice.
And I never am.
Oh, that's too bad then.
Well, it's their own fault.
Fair enough. When we last left our show...
when we last left our show?
Yeah, last week.
Mm-hmm.
We were in the middle of a list.
Oh, yes, we were. Okay.
And that was our cliffhanger that we ended on. So I'm feeling like we should probably address the list.
What's happening with Susan Anton?
Sorry, what is happening with Susan? What is happening
from a long time ago. That was this thing in the show Cliffhanger.
Oh, my God.
That starred Susan Anton.
Oh, my God. What a reference.
I know. It's so old.
What a reference.
I was actually looking it up a while ago. This is so long ago. I can't remember now. I've just forgotten it again.
I think we've mentioned on the show. Now, for those of you who don't know, it was a TV series, and it was split into three, and they would all end with cliffhangers. One was a Dracula one. One was people investigating underneath the earth.
That's right.
A hollow earth.
A hill of hidden city.
Am I right? And the third one was a Western, or am I remembering
correctly? No, Susan Anton was like a journalist or something, or some woman in peril kind of a situation?
Yes, that's right.
Yeah.
It's almost like, what was that? What's the Perils of Penelope or something?
Of Pauline, yes.
Perils of Pauline, is that kind
Penelope
of thing?
Penelope Pitstop is who you're thinking of, but that's not. The Perils of Pauline would be the woman tied to a train track. Well, a train comes towards her. That's not how the song goes. I don't even know what song does that song go. Do you know what I mean? Piano one, but I can't. Now that I've said it two different ways, you can't remember it either, right?
And I legally can't talk about Penelope Pitstop right now, and that is actually true.
Okay, well,
Can't say why. Okay, so, but yeah, the TV show
Can
was
Can you talk about Chenelope? No, forget it.
Chenelope Shitstop? Is that what you're doing?
I was just going to stop it and say it and just let it hang there.
Yeah.
Like I like to do.
That adorable thing where you know, send you all to hello, operator. good times. The cliffhanger TV show, which Dave is making a reference to, lasted like a season.
No one liked it. But I thought it was pretty good when I was a kid.
Yeah.
I liked it a lot. I used to watch it every night, or every Tuesday night.
Yeah, the Dracula one I found kind of creepy. Mm-hmm. We were going through different movies on our list. By the way, thanks to everyone who wrote in on our website and gave your own list.
Yeah, except for Thomas Calloway. Your lists always suck.
Oh, wow. All right.
I'm just joking.
Interesting. This is bold choice going after listeners.
Just joking.
That's pretty cocky. Yep.
We can afford to lose one and have two listeners left. It was really nice. I liked everyone's lists, especially like movies I hadn't heard of. And I was like kind of making little mental notes. I'm like, I'm going to go back through these lists and see some of these films.
Yeah, I was looking at a couple of those
They're all really good.
I was going to watch The Long Kiss Goodnight after you mentioned it last week. Very, very difficult to find that online.
Well, I have the Laserdisc if you want to borrow that.
All right. Have you noted? All right, folks. That's two things now Dave has said in the episode that makes him look quite old. One, I've got the Laserdisc. And two, remember Cliffhanger? By the way, look at what year Cliffhanger came out.
Hey, do you know what makes me look quite old? Me. I have gray hair. Okay. I have the look of a person who's older.
Yeah, but no one knows
vintage.
That on a podcast.
I'm retro.
No one has any idea.
I am comfortable with that part of myself.
You're saying visuals.
Last night, I...
yelled at a kid for being on your lawn.
Well, for the last couple of days at work, we've been throwing the frisbee during break time in the yard.
That's something elderly people do.
It's fun. And then I went rock climbing last night with a couple of workmates.
I'm incorrect that young people do not do that. That is a... young people do that. Older folks do not.
Yeah.
Unless they're trying to escape from prison.
Unless they're trying to escape from prison, which I was not at that time. I had a good time. I did some good climbs and I really enjoyed it. But today I'm feeling it. I don't know whether I'm feeling it from the rock climbing or just from the running around in a hard cement or hard asphalt yard with wearing work boots chasing a frisbee. I'm not too sure which one is giving me a little bit of
rock climbing.
Soreness.
Let's say it's rock climbing.
Think so?
Yeah, because you're climbing a bunch of rocks.
Well, they're just walls with...
Is this the same place you rock climbed before?
Yep.
Nice.
Yep. Yeah, it was fun.
I know people who go to that same place, surprisingly.
Yeah, but,
The amount of people I know that climb rocks.
You climb until you get to this point where you cannot climb anymore because your hands just can't hold
your
weight anymore. And you're just like... last night I went up this one and then I got to this point where I was like, man, I'm so close to the top. I'm sure I can make it. But I had my hands in these two really juicy handholds, and I could barely keep my grip. I knew I was going to drop, so I said, I'm done. Just let go and went down. Do you leave the
when you go to the PNE this year, are you going to do the rock climb? Going to try that?
No, because I was very busy, but I've done it before.
You've done that rock climb?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, the more difficult one. That's the more fun.
My nephew has done that as well. And it's, I used to have a roommate that would go legit climbing rocks with his brothers.
Yeah.
And then he'd show me the areas he rock climbed. Horrific. This looks like you're going to die.
Yeah.
That's not worth it. I don't think that's
it's
worth
interesting
the fun.
Thing. I can see why there are, like, how you can make it harder and harder for yourself, because it's something that you do that you're so involved in the tiny details of what you're doing that you actually, like, I'm never thinking about how high I am while I'm climbing.
No, you're busy.
Because you're busy climbing, you know. It's when you get to the top and then you look down to, and then you start, and when you're going to belay down, you just sort of let that person below lower you down on the rope. You don't climb back down. And so that's that moment of trust where you're like, yeah, and then you go, you know. And that's, then you kind of feel the height. But when you're climbing up, you don't really notice it at all. You're so busy working. It's kind of like when Lisa's mom and dad used to have the farm and we would hay in the summer, and I would work on the hay wagon and stack the hay on it, because I'm a obsessive compulsive person. I like to stack things. So that's where I would.
Well, singing Hey Nani Na.
Hey Nani Na. And, you'd get them up, you know, 6 or 7, 8 high of bales. And then you'd be up there and you'd look down and you go, oh, this is really high. But because you were just working away, you didn't notice. You're just getting bales from people and climbing up and putting them in place. And yeah, then you, when you're riding back down, you're like, or you take a moment just to look around and you're like, whoa, I'm high up. But when you're working, you don't think about it because you're just in that place. And I can see why, people get in, you know, or have problems, you know, or have accidents when they're climbing, just because you can, you know, you're so focused on it that you don't even pay attention to where you are.
But I can see the good part about not being able to think about anything else in your life. You're having stress or whatever. Mm-hmm. You're rock climbing. You have nothing else to think about but get to that rock, and you're, can't think about your other troubles.
Most people who climb around here, I mean, they're using ropes and stuff. So they are tied up. They're not just free climbing. The free climbing, I mean, that's just... To me, that's just crazy. Yeah. Like, that's just beyond.
That's Tom Cruise. That's Mission Impossible 2. What are you thinking?
Yeah.
What are you thinking? You're not thinking is your problem.
Yeah.
No dice.
Yeah.
Don't go for that.
Impressive scene. He is has very little fear, Tom Cruise. Like, he seems to me to be a person who's has a high capacity for, like, I don't know.
Do you think he has a little fear, or do you think the fear is he just has to keep proving himself over and over again?
I don't think. Well, here's my argument against that: is the fact that he's rescued or saved people a couple times in emergencies, which to me tells me that he's a person who acts quickly without thinking. He's not afraid at moment. Like, you or I in that moment, we'd be like afraid to like jump into it. We would have a hesitation because can I help? Can I do this? But he doesn't do that. He just runs right in and helps someone, you know? And so that to me says that it's more, there's less fear there than there is about fear of his ego or whatever, you know?
When you come into the movies, though, where it's like, I got to top that stunt I did last time, this time. And not in the way you top a stunt in, say, a Fast and the Furious movie. We're like, how about this time it's a submarine? Oh, that's good.
It's all computer generated.
It's all computer generated, but it's still, there's some really good scenes, by the way, in the latest one.
There always are. Those movies are pretty good.
But, you know, it's something impressive and everyone goes, ooh, that's good. But he's almost Jackie Channing it, where it's, I got to let you know, I'm actually hanging off this plane. And they'll let you know that beforehand.
Yeah.
And that's part of the selling feature, and you're doing all that.
Yeah.
And it's like, and that's fine. But how much of that is for you? And how much of that is, you know, it's to prove something, right? It's like, does that make the movie more entertaining to you to go, oh, you know, he's really hanging off that plane?
Well, it does. For me, it does. For me, it does in a way. I mean, that's the same reason when I watch a Buster Keaton film, I'm impressed by the stunts that he does, because I know that he's doing them himself and there's not another person doing it. And I'm a big admirer of physical abilities and physical feats of
daring do.
Well, daring do or whatever, where it's very athletic, whether it's people who are very athletic or it's people who are very gymnastic or whatever. I just really like that kind of people who've trained themselves to that point. You know?
I mean, I'm a huge fan, I think probably mentioned this in the show, of Bill Irwin, who's most recently appeared on Legion. And, you know, just seeing just physical business he does. Mm-hmm. Small things he'll do, and then big things he'll do. Or then they give him a dance number to do while someone else is fighting, and he's mimicking the fight, but with a dance. It's just beautiful. And I do love that kind of business.
Yeah,
I just worry that Tom Cruise at some point is going to do something to prove something something to us that does not, because anytime you then see behind the scenes, and maybe they fake it, but you know, there's always something, well, this went a little wrong and this could have gone. And it's like, well, don't kill yourself over a movie.
Yeah.
I appreciate all the stuff Buster Keaton did, but you know, when that house falls on him through the window, I appreciate how it looks, but that could have killed him.
Yes.
Is that worthwhile? Is that worthwhile risking your life for that scene in a movie? And some would say yes, and some would say no. You would say yes. I would say no, because I think life is more valuable than you.
Well, life is more valuable. That life is more valuable. Your life is more valuable to you. To Buster Keaton, life would have no value if he couldn't risk put himself in danger, control danger for his movies. Mm-hmm. His movies would have no value to him. His movies had to have that element of risk and something that made the audience go, that's what he needed in those films, mm-hmm. you know, and that's what made his life valuable. The same way that it's totally incomprehensible to me, a person who wants to free climb up a cliff and put himself in great danger. That is incomprehensible to me. But to that person, his life would not be worth living if he couldn't have that thrill in his life.
Yeah.
You know, so, you know, it depends what you want. If your life is a thrill when you're sitting in a chair reading a book like me, mm-hmm. that's, you know, one person. And another person, their life, you know, has to have action and has, you know, risk and peril to it.
Mm-hmm.
Like my brother. My brother has to have that in his life. He has to have that element of risk and taking chances and jumping off a roof into a pool and things like that, where to me it's just completely cringe. I just cringe at the thought of it to this day.
Mm-hmm.
But that's what you need sometimes. That's what some people are like that.
I can see it as a teenage boy, you know, where, you know, you're fighting boredom so much as a teenage boy. You're fighting that, and so you have the thrill. And again, I look at like the Buster, because I often do think of that Buster Keaton thing. And I go like, now that was an amazing scene.
Mm-hmm.
We all love it.
Yeah.
It's great. It's a great scene. Then you look at like Harold Lloyd. You see him hanging off the clock.
He's not really hanging. I mean, he's not really hanging.
Well, this is my point.
Okay.
He's not really hanging off that clock.
Yeah.
But you.
Well, he's hanging off the clock, but he's not hanging on the side of a
understood.
Building.
Understood. He's not risking his life.
Mm-hmm.
It's still an impressive physical stunt. He's still doing dangling. He's still doing business.
Sure.
When you watch it, it's thrilling because
you've
got the feeling that he's hanging off and his life is in danger. But his life isn't in danger.
Yeah.
But it looks like his life is in danger. Mm-hmm. So is that less valuable than the Buster Keaton gag of it falling, the house falling down?
No, but
is
once
it worth it? That's what I mean. It's like.
But once again, the Buster Keaton gag, I mean, it's carefully controlled. The house.
It's true.
It was a really rigid panel.
Yeah.
It was more rigid than you would have an actual house.
Yep.
It was. He stood where the window was. It was all carefully calculated.
As possible.
It was winched up with him standing there.
Sure.
And then it was released back down again.
Yep.
You know, so it was very controlled. I mean, yes, something could go wrong. Just like any stunt in any movie.
Yep.
You could say that about the corkscrew jump in Man with the Golden Gun.
Mm-hmm.
You could say that about the parachute
anything
falls.
Chan has done.
Anything, well, many things that Jackie Chan has done. They're all done with an element of danger. And that's partly what audiences want from the films. That's what he wants to give the audience.
Right.
You know, he wants to give the audience that sense of actual peril and danger. But it's a controlled peril and danger. It's not.
Well, this is
it's
the
not
weird
absolute
thing to me about
risk.
That. Now you got a Jackie Chan.
Because you seem to forget the fact that there are also stuntmen who are doing these things. Mm-hmm. It's not just actors who, you know. And to me, what Tom Cruise is doing isn't any different. I mean, he's just doing what a stuntman would do in his stead,
mm-hmm.
right? But what Tom Cruise wants to give you is a sense, an authentic feel in the films of this is an actual.
Well, let's take that last film that he did, and we'll get to the list in a second.
What's the last film that he did?
The last the
Edge
Mission
of Tomorrow?
Impossible one where he's hanging off the
okay.
plane.
Okay, the last Mission Impossible film, you mean?
Yeah,
okay.
That's what I mean. I'm not talking about Jack Reacher.
Okay.
Two. Even Reacher. So he's hanging off the plane. But the bit about that is a couple of things. The way they sell it is they let you know ahead of time in all the press, this is real.
Mm-hmm.
He's really doing it.
Okay.
So it wouldn't be something the stuntman would be doing, because the only way it makes any real impact, because the stunt itself is like, that's neat, but it's not, oh my God. Like you wouldn't, in a movie, if you thought it was a stuntman, you wouldn't be, oh my stars. It's got to
well, be. You couldn't do it effectively with a stuntman, because you couldn't have.
Right, the
shot.
Whole stunt is set up to be, you know, it's Tom Cruise.
Mm-hmm.
He's hanging off the thing.
Yeah.
He's doing the bit.
Yeah.
And, you know, I don't know really what that buys you except good for him.
Well, it buys you hype for your movie.
Yeah, that's right. It buys you hype.
Yeah.
But, like, he's in no danger because this was in the past and I just saw him and he's alive. So it's not like watching a guy tightrope walk. I'm aware that Jackie Chan made that jump across the building into the fire escape.
Yeah.
Because he's here doing press. So he survived. So I'm not thrilled as in the,
yeah.
you know, I'm like, it is more, Good for him.
Yeah.
Good for him. I'm now going, I admire that he did this, mm-hmm. but I don't know if that, I don't know if admiration makes your movie better. In fact, I think you could actually say it doesn't, because when you're watching that stunt off the top, you're not thinking of him as the character. You're thinking, look at Tom Cruise hanging off that thing. Yeah. Good for Tom Cruise.
Yeah. No, I don't really like that stunt very much. I'm not going to defend that stunt. I do think that is a bit of a hammy thing that kind of takes away from the film, because yeah, there's so much hype around it that you're kind of like, oh, this is really happening. Oh, interesting. Whereas the one in the film before that, when he was in that needle building in Dubai, yeah. I didn't know anything about that. So when I saw the film, that's a very tense mm-hmm. and very well done sequence.
And also, but the way they play that sequence out is, I don't know how much is CGI, how much is not, how much is real and how mm-hmm. much is not. I know they said he really wanted to do it, but it's just played out as a really good
yeah.
sequence.
Yeah.
Whereas the plane going up with the thing is like, yeah. that's fine.
It's like a James Bond cold open or
yeah,
something.
Yeah,
it's
like fine. That. Yeah. You know, but, you know, the glove is working. Now it's not. Now it's falling yeah. down. Now yeah. it's whatever. Mm-hmm. You know, that's just,
yeah.
that's Brad Bird really being well Brad Bird and knowing almost cartoon type pacing on that kind of thing.
The other one, yeah, it's just something to get the movie, kick off the movie. And I don't even think it's that effective. I think it would be more effective if they kicked off the movie with the record store scene. Mm-hmm. That's the better scene. But whatever. I didn't make the movie, so
there you go. And we didn't make any of these movies we're going to talk about now either. So here we go.
Let's get to our quiz. Can I just go back just a little bit
in our list?
Just a little bit backwards.
To last week,
yeah.
All right, let's do it.
Because
everyone, go back to where you were last week.
Because you know
just
how
remember it, what last week was like.
You know how it is. You can't think of something, and then when it happens, you're like, oh. And that was Faye Film never released a DVD. And I didn't think of Let It Be, the Beatles film Let It Be, and I would love for that film to finally be released. And I always feel like it's on the verge of being released. In fact, I thought it was going to come out this year.
Yeah.
And then they came out with 8 Days a Week. Mm-hmm. And I think because I'd heard that a live thing was coming out from the Beatles, so I was like, Let It Be. Oh, yes. But no, it was just, which was still good. I enjoyed that Ron Howard documentary. But I would love for them, please.
So for the record?
There was a Laserdisc that came out of Let It Be.
Uh-huh.
To date myself, but
do you have the Laserdisc?
I don't have the Laserdisc, no.
Could someone please send Dave the
Laserdisc?
No,
you don't, because it's going to come out on DVD.
Do you have a Laserdisc player?
I do.
Please send Dave the Laserdisc if you have it.
Of course, why would they send
me
a Laserdisc?
Dave will send you a garage door.
No, you're not going to get a garage door and don't send me a Laserdisc.
He'll pack it up for you. He knows how to do it.
Don't even send me a Laserdisc.
By the way, I don't know if anyone's, have you ever put up your packings of things on our page?
No.
It's, if you ever get a chance and you see Dave, have him show you maybe on his phone or such how he packs a garage door. It's really impressive.
Oh yeah, we did a couple of those this week.
It's really impressive. It really is.
Thanks. It was crazy ones this week. Some really big doors went out, or big dunnage wraps as we call them.
Okay, so we ended last time with childhood favorite.
We did talk about that. Okay, yep.
We ended last time with that, mm-hmm. and now we're starting this time with favorite franchise.
Okay, you start first so I can copy what
favorite
you say.
Favorite French fries.
Favorite French fries? McDonald's.
I'm going to go with the Marvel movies. Not the Sony Marvel movies, but the Marvel series of movies, starting with Iron Man all the way to...
I guess that's a franchise? Yeah.
Oh, of course it is. Yeah, they're all connected.
Didn't think about it that way, but okay. Yeah.
Iron Man goes to Iron Man 2, goes mm-hmm. to Iron Man 3, all the Captain America.
Is Guardians of the Galaxy included in that? Is it connected to those films?
Yeah, because...
Too tenuous.
No, not tenuous at all. Nah, it's all connected with the Infinity Stones, and the characters from Thor go and visit the Collector at the end of that one movie, and then the Collector's in the other one movie, and they all tie in. In fact, it even ties into Howard the Duck, for crying out loud. It not only, of course, ties in with the movies, and here's the thing I like about the franchise, is they're not beholden to formula or genre on any of them, because like Iron Man is a very different movie than Guardians of the Galaxy, is a very different movie than Ant-Man,
mm-hmm.
you know, is a very different movie than the Avengers.
Yeah.
You know, they've all got a sense of humor to them.
Okay.
They've got bounce, they've got mm-hmm. spark, they end with a big climactic fight. But they're definitely their own things.
Yeah.
Winter Soldier is a very different
very
movie
good film.
Than Iron Man 3. You know, they're all their own thing. Mm-hmm. And then they can then take that world and then spin it off into the Netflix series as well. You know, which
they're a little long, but yeah.
You think they're very well? You don't have to watch them all.
That's I don't. That's a good point. I don't watch them.
There you go.
I do give them a chance.
I do watch them. And aside from the Iron Fist, I think they've all been quite good.
Hmm. No, that's a good choice. I do. I think that is a good choice. A lot of those films are very good. Some of them are passable.
Yeah.
You know, but overall, very good. And I like the fact that they'll take a chance with the people they hire to do their films. Thinking of Waika Taititi doing the new, I think that's his name, doing the new Thor Ragnarok.
Okay.
You know, the director,
looking
writer,
good so far, yeah.
What's that?
Looking good so far.
Well, just but writer director of some quirky films, Hunt for the Wilder People, and then What We Do in the Shadows. Two very good films, like excellent, excellent films. Both those films are great.
And Shane Black doing
Iron Man 3. Doing Iron Man 3, which I like that film a lot. I thought that was very much in his canon. And if you enjoy a Shane Black film, you're going to enjoy that version of
Iron Man 3.
My only
disappointment being that Edgar Wright didn't get to do Iron Man, Ant-Man, because I would like to have seen that.
And that, to me, is interesting, and it feels like for a moment they panicked in the midst of their, you know what I mean? Like, there was some faltering of confidence where they're hiring, you know, like the guys who directed Captain America: Winter Soldier. I mean, they came
out of television,
yeah. Which, you know, seems like a
community
weird
community and stuff.
Yeah, and that's a big trust to put in these guys. Like, say, okay, we're gonna let you guys do like a big franchise film for us, because Captain America 2 was building on a so-so movie. Captain America, the first film's okay, but Winter Soldier is a really, really good movie. Mm-hmm. Great if you like spy films, it's sort of Jason Bourne and stuff like that. It's very much in that sort of mold. But yeah, it's interesting with Ant-Man, Ant-Man's at best a minor character. And that the film, once again, I think is so-so. I don't think it's a great movie.
Yeah.
But
it's charming, but
it has its good points, some fun moments too. But overall, you're just kind of, And I feel like Edgar Wright could have really given it some visual flair, which that movie kind of lacked. And yeah, it's too bad that he was taken off of. But it feels like before Guardians of the Galaxy came out, that they just didn't know what they wanted for tone in their movies.
Well,
and they kind of
the idea apparently was people thought the Guardians of the Galaxy was going to tank huge, and if Ant-Man tanked as well, then the franchise is screwed.
Yeah.
So they panicked and took Edgar Wright off, or asked him to do things that he said no.
Yeah.
And then Edgar Wright left, and then all of a sudden Guardians did great, and then it was like, oh shit, That's they are where they are.
But that's what I mean. It's like they had a crisis of confidence in the middle of a pretty good run of success.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, it felt like
they didn't
want
to have two weirdo films in a row that would.
I guess that was their thinking. But I mean, they gave Kenneth Branagh Thor, and that felt like a weird choice. And you know, I guess they wanted kind of a Shakespearean element to it. But I thought he brought more of a down to earth feeling to that movie with a lot of physical comedy and fish out of water sequences that were pretty good. Once again, not a great movie, but good elements, you know. Okay, well, my favorite franchise, which
I'm gonna guess.
Oh, sorry.
The Smurf franchise.
How did you know? You know I love the Smurfs.
Yeah, because you're a blue boy.
I am.
What they call Smurf fans, the blue boys. Mm-hmm.
Mission Impossible franchise I chose.
Oh, did you?
Yeah.
Even including the second one.
I don't mind that film. I like John Woo, so.
Okay.
Yeah, why? Am I supposed to, something bad about that movie?
You know what? When I first watched them, I really didn't like the third one, because I thought it was too mean, and I liked the second one. Upon rewatching them,
Now you think the second one's mean?
No, I think the second one just, like, goes a little too slow. The third one isn't as bad as I remembered it, though I still think it's a little bit cruel, and that takes you a little out of the world.
Well, who's cruel in it? The villain's cruel or Tom Cruise's?
The death of a character near the beginning just seemed very, very brutal. Like almost, I know it was sci-fi, but it seemed like realistically brutal, like too brutal, and just went, ugh. You know, it's like the motivation of like, I'm going to kill a woman to motivate the guy just feels like, you know, every time they do it in a James Bond movie, you're just like, it's fine. You know, it's fine. But is that what it is now? Are we still doing that?
Mm-hmm.
Is that the thing that gets you out of bed that makes you go, eh? And if you do it in a brutal kind of torturous way.
Yeah.
Ugh.
It wasn't super brutal, but if you say so.
Yeah, it took me out of it. This isn't my favorite franchise. It's yours. So you go on. Yuck your yum.
What I like about the Mission Impossible films, this is kind of what I was saying about the Marvel ones, is what I really enjoy about those films is that they've given each movie to a very distinctive director and just let them do their own film for good or bad. Like, if you don't like number two, I can understand, because John Woo is peculiar at best.
And I like a John Woo.
But you like a John Woo, you know, you like his movies because they're over the top. Like his American films, like Face Off and Broken Arrow, I mean, they're just crazy.
Yeah. They're
crazy movies.
Crazy ass movies, yeah.
They're just like, and even the Jean-Claude Van Damme one, which his name escapes me now, but all those films. What's that?
Pants Off.
Pants Off.
Or Two Guys Trade Pants.
Pants Off, Dance
And they're
off.
Twins.
Yeah. I wish I could think of it. But anyway, you know, so, but yeah, those movies, lots of doves flying around inexplicably, the slow motion, you know, a lot of stuff that we loved in the in the Hong Kong cinema, or his movies from Hong Kong, he kind of was obviously told, probably didn't even want to repeat these things, but because he was brought in from Hong Kong because of these tricks, because of these little tricks, people wanted them in his movies, and he probably kind of shoehorned them in here and there, but probably wasn't that keen on them. But I think, like, a lot of the stunts and stuff like that, the shootout in the medical, like in the, I don't know, it's genetic testing facility or whatever it is. When the break-in's great. The fight inside it is great. It's, you know, the motorcycle chase when he's spinning on the front wheel.
Hanging from the mountain's great.
That's okay. Yeah, hanging from the mountain's great.
Throwing his sunglasses, having them dissolve.
Like, I think that film is very stylish, very fun. The flamenco dance sequence is very good. Like, it's a good movie, and it has lots of good. That Tandy Newton is a really great actress, and sure. Tom Cruise does he does a great job every film.
The
I think.
The guy that turned down the part of Wolverine to be in it.
Whoops. Well, probably wasn't that keen to be in a long-running franchise rather than just being in a one-off. Yeah.
No one knew that was going to be a long-running franchise.
Yeah, I guess that's true. I love Brian De Palma, so the first film is, you know, I know it's more nuanced than that. These are big budget productions, so for me to say that the director is getting like their full head of steam, that's not true, of course.
But they're
there's
all
lots
very
of
different movies.
Fingers
too,
in the pot. But yeah, the first film is very strange. It's very De Palma-esque with a lot of, you know, little kind of subterfuge and twists and turns. Yeah. And
set them up,
and
take them down.
Reveals
you think it's this
and stuff.
Way, it's going that way.
Yeah.
And an ending that made people mad who were fans of the TV show.
Yeah. But I like that idea of like a kind of a scorched earth policy to the television, right? It's just like, it's kind of like what they did. Now it's okay to take Star Trek and reverse time and have it all change and to say, screw that stuff never happened. But at that time when they went, screw that stuff never happened, you know, or just let's forget about that and just start with a new kind of clean slate.
It was like,
oh, Jim Phelps would never do that. Who cares? He's a TV character from a show from 20 years ago. Who cares?
Probably people that went to see a Mission Impossible movie who weren't there for Tom Cruise. We're like, oh, I love Mission Impossible. I can't wait to see this show. What?
Oh,
what happened?
All those grandmas.
Who said what now?
All those mad grandmas. The third one, I think the third one is a very good film. And it also has a really long run from Tom Cruise, which is a very impressive long run that Rundy does.
Introduces Simon Pegg in there.
Simon Pegg? Yep. Yeah. I'm less keen on having the repeating. I like the fact that like a John Rhys Davies is in one movie and then he's gone. And then, you know, I just like the fact that they kind of replace the people around him. I think that's really good. I even like the last one. I didn't think it was perfect. The Mission Impossible 5, is it called? Rogue Nation? I didn't think that film was perfect. I'm not a huge Christopher McQuarrie fan. I think his films are a little bit leaden, like a little kind of draggy. But it has some great sequences again, like the dive into the thing. And climbing the pole. Yeah, like there's an impressive physical stunt that's way more impressive than the airplane thing.
And yet that one felt more of a character thing.
That's right.
Yeah.
Yeah. It felt like in the moment, I got to do this. I got to get out of this trap. And I love the actress in that film. I don't know her name. She's a Swedish actress. And she has a name that's very, she's Swedish, but she has a name that sounds Rebecca something, you know, it just sounds like.
IKEA?
Rebecca IKEA. That sounds very Swedish. You're right. It's like Rebecca Ferguson or something like that. Sure. And you're just like, wait, that's Swedish? But, and she's very good in that film. Like, it's like, you know, I like them all. I like
and
all those movies.
I love Brad Bird. So I'm
I think Ghost Protocol is another very good film. That film, it kind of combines the best of all of the, it's actually my favorite one, that one as well.
Yeah.
I'm sure you like it a lot too because you like Brad Bird. Yeah. But I think it's the strongest because it combines elements of the first three into sort of show elements with the kind of trickery, with the screen in the hallway, you know, and kind of, you know what I mean? Like sort of, so they actually have like them breaking into a place and doing a lot of their gimmicky stuff, but also takes away their gimmicks and makes them have to fight without them.
Yeah.
And, you know, even when he's climbing the thing and the gimmicky stuff isn't working and the mask thing isn't making the mask properly. And they
Simon
have to like,
Pegg is so, hey, oh, we're going to wear masks. He's like, no, we're taking that away.
Yeah. And it's good. Yeah. I think, you know, I think it's a strong franchise. There's lots of franchises you could choose, obviously, but.
I look at that one and I go, I think like the James Bond franchise could learn from that and just go mix it up a bit. So it's not always the bubba da bubba da booba da bubba da boo. Mm-hmm. I think having Daniel Craig was good and that refreshed it all for a while. And then it
and
went back
tired.
To bibba da bubba da bibba da bubba da boo. It's like, we know what's happening.
Well, there's a lot. I mean, the problem with franchises or any kind of long running situation like that is it's so affected by outside forces that we don't know about, you know, for instance, Quantum of Solace, where there's a writer's strike. So what you get is what you get, because there's no one who can work on the movie to punch it up a bit. So this is what you're going to get, guys. It also could have used a way better director on that movie. Ugh, horrible.
I agree.
Horrible.
All right, moving on. We got favorite trilogy, which is, you know, can also be like a franchise. Seems almost like the same.
But there's
question
only three of them. There's a lot of films in the MCU.
Okay, so back to you for this one.
Okay, well, I'm going to go with a classic. This was something that I saw as a teenager and pretty much just made me love movies even more than I did. Made me wish that television had letterboxing. And I became a proponent of letterboxing well before the existence of laser discs or DVDs.
Mm-hmm. You would take actually like black tape and put it at the top and bottom of your TV screen.
Just to fake it till you make it. And that is the Sergio Leone's Man With No Name trilogy.
Okay.
I love those movies. I just love those films. All of them. I think they're all just fantastic.
Name all three then. Let the people know.
You're
making assumptions.
Muppets Take Manhattan.
That's Godfather the first one. 2.
Godfather 2. And the Linguini
Three's
incident.
Company, the movie.
Oh,
yeah,
come on. You don't walk all over me. It's
Fistful of Dollars.
Fistful of Dollars for a few dollars more, and then The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly, which I've already named as one of my favorite Western. But
doesn't it bother you that the third one doesn't have dollars in the name? Good, the Bad, and the Dollars?
No.
Shouldn't it be?
That's why I would say it's the Man With No Name trilogy. It's more about, I mean, even though he's sort of named in all the films, he's Blondie in Good, the Bad, and the Ugly.
Right.
And he does have a name in... And for a few dollars more. I mean, a lot of those movies, they already existed as scripts. The scripts were kind of portmanteaued into becoming a Clint Eastwood thing. I just, you know, it's a combination of lots of things. One is the fact that Clint Eastwood, he was kind of a nobody when he did it. I think he'd only done Hang 'Em High.
Well, he'd done TV.
And he'd done Rawhide.
Rawhide,
that's right.
So he'd had enough time as a Western guy.
He knew.
He was on a horse and could shoot a fake gun.
He knew how to ride a horse. He had lived a life with a little bit of Western elements to it. Yeah. He was a proficient rider before he became an actor. And he'd done some, you know, he'd done a little bit of you know, physical labor and stuff like that. Enough physical labor to convince him it's better to be an actor than to be a physical laborer. And, you know, he's given the opportunity to do these movies, and he kind of went in sight unseen. Like, he didn't know who Leone was particularly. He didn't know him. He was given the script, and he did an interesting thing. He went through the script, and he crossed out all his lines. He just went through and just threw out a lot of his dialogue. He threw out as being useless, a lot of repetitive stuff, and things that he was just explaining stuff that everyone was already seeing on the screen. You couldn't see the point of that. When he was leaving, he took his gun that he wore on the show. He bought a serape because he thought that his character would look good in that. And then he bought some cigars. And he wasn't a smoker, but he bought some little cheroots to smoke as his character too. He thought that would be good. And that's why he often has a squint when he's acting in them, because he hated the taste of the cigars. So he's grimacing from that more than he's more like that. So that became part of his character as well. And so that element of it. And then we have Sergio Leone himself, who wrote and directed the films. The first one is a total ripoff of Yojimbo, the Kurosawa film, the Japanese film.
What was the Bruce Willis ripoff of that? Or remake?
Oh, I don't think it's really a ripoff of
Last
that.
Man Standing?
Last Man Standing. But I mean, it already existed. That kind of story already, because really Yojimbo in a way is a ripoff of the Dashiell Hammett novel, which is... gosh, guys, help me out here.
I don't know. I've seen you dressed as Dashiell Hammett, so I'm very surprised that you don't know this.
Yeah, I did dress.
I've seen you cosplay as Dashiell Hammett.
Shoot, I can't remember the name of it. Sorry. But it's a similar story where
we'll put it in the
where
show
the
notes.
His longtime short story character, the Continental Op, comes to this town, I think in Colorado, and it's basically like a company town. And so he comes into this town, and he plays both sides against each other. And one of his coworkers comes to help him and thinks he's gone crazy because he's just causing so much mayhem. And he says, "You've gone blood simple." And that's the first time I ever saw that word used outside of the film. And I thought, oh, that's where the Coens got that from. Because the Coens then, when they did Miller's Crossing, it's basically a rewrite of Dashiell Hammett's The Glass Key. So I'm like, oh, okay, these guys know Dashiell Hammett if they're using taking these terms. And man, I wish I could remember that. Red Harvest, that's what it's called. Red Harvest is the book. I really recommend that book. It's really good. I would love to... when I used to dream about making movies, it was always my dream to make that film with John Goodman as the Continental Op.
Because
he would be so perfect in that role.
Because
he has so much, he can be jolly, but he can also be so menacing and threatening, you know, like he can really bring that bigness to a role. And he'd be so good at that, where he, you know, cajoling people and then threatening people and playing, you know, and being kind of cruel and callous. And there's it's a good book.
So if anyone knows John Goodman's agent, let him know.
David has an idea for a movie for him. So So that's a similar idea to Yojimbo, and then Yojimbo. And so I think Last Man Standing kind of borrows, goes back and borrows from Red Harvest.
Oh, okay.
And then, but of course it has the antecedents in Yojimbo and For a Few Dollars More. And in fact, when they did For a Few Dollars More, originally Kurosawa said no to making that film. He, you know, they approached him about doing an adaptation of that movie, and he said, no, I don't want that. And so what Leone did is the simple thing of doing it anyway. He made it anyway. And so the film was held up for several years in litigation before it could be released, when they finally reached some sort of rapprochement with Kurosawa and the film was actually released. So by that time, when it released, it was a pretty big hit. It was pretty good. It was originally made with very little money. It was a very low-budget film, as you can probably tell from watching it. Just the amount, the action and stuff like that. It's more suggested than what we see, you know?
Okay.
The next film, it's like he had an extra hour of budget, so he just adds an hour of running time to the film. And then for Good, the Bad, and the Ugly, he has another extra hour of budget, so he adds another hour to the running time. But then For a Few Dollars More, of course, with Lee Van Cleef, and then Clint Eastwood's character is in no way a repeat of his character from A Fistful of Dollars. He's like almost it's a different character. And I don't think the films try to in any way link them. They're not linked or anything, but they're just all kind of, they have a similar look, similar feel with you know, the fantastic direction and editing, the Ennio Morricone scores. I think those films are flawless. And like I say, when I was a kid, they come on television and they'd have the credit sequence and would have like a red band along the top and bottom. I remember this vividly from For a Few Dollars More. And there's a character riding on a horse into the distance, and then someone shoots him and he falls off the horse, and it's all done in this big, you know, and then the movie starts, blonk, the screen is now filled with everyone's faces, because what was previously like this super CinemaScope, long, narrow screen now becomes like, you know, 2/3 of it are gone for your, forget it. But when I could finally see those films, and of course I own them on DVD.
And we live in a good time when you can have a big TV and see stuff on Letterboxd now.
We are
in a glorious era. Mine.
What's your franchise?
Mine is a little bit of what we just talked about before. I'm going to go with the Captain America trilogy, because something I like about that is all three are so different.
Yeah.
So different. And you got the first one directed by the fellow who directed The Rocketeer. I forget his name.
Okay.
And again, it's not
Frank.
Frank Rocketeer. And by the way, sorry, just going to Clint Eastwood. Here's the only problem with like Clint Eastwood movies and why you should have him be the man with no name. Because you're never going to beat the name Clint Eastwood. That is the best name. So whatever your name is, my name's Frank, but boo, Clint's better. Okay, whatever.
What about Dirty Harry?
What's Harry's name? Harry Housen. That's his name. He wants to be an animator. But the Captain America movie, so the first one, which I think is the weakest of the three, but still I think struck the right chord. And there's, the scenes where, you know, he's there with the scientist and talking about, you know, be a good man. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it magnifies the goodness. And, you know, the little scene with him on the bed and they've got the drinks and he offers him the drink. But like, oh, you can't drink that. You got surgery in the morning. So he drinks both of them. Just nice little bits of business.
Good actor. That guy.
Sharon Carter. She does good stuff in there. Mm-hmm. His chase scene where he's running, you know, for the first time when he's got the superpowers and he's just like, it doesn't know what he's doing. He's like a big dog who doesn't know what he's doing. It's great. And it ends with like the kid being pushed in the water. He's going to rescue the kid. And the kid's like, it's okay, I can swim. It's like, yeah, all right, let's keep going. Yeah. You know, just sets the tone nice, does nice stuff.
It's a little boring, but
And a little bit, but still charming. Mm-hmm. I like the World's Fair. I like seeing, you know, references to like the original Human Torch, things like that. You know, if you're a comics fan, that's like, but not taking away from it. The floating car, Howard Stark. Nice character there. And then ends with a really good scene in New York with the big reveal of, here's the thing. Here's your Planet of the Apes ending, which is, you know, he's now in the future.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
You know, and then you know, if you're in the movie theater, then you get to see the trailer for the Avengers and go, holy shit, we're going to town.
Mm-hmm.
Then the next one is of course your Winter Soldier, which changes genre.
Movie. Yeah,
as we were previously talking about, just an out and out, probably one of the best, if not the best, of the Marvel series. Just grounded, good, good action. Well,
Do I like it more than the Guardians of the Galaxy?
Very different. It's hard.
But I'm just saying, you're saying it's best, and I'm just thinking, do I like? I do like it a lot. It's let's say they're 1A and 1B for me, the Guardians of the Galaxy and Winter Soldier.
Fair enough. But yeah, just good emotions, good reveals, you know, Robert Redford, good. You know, delivering in a Robert Redford thing. He's leaning on shit. he's being Robert Redford. It's just good. It's good stuff.
Yeah.
And it changes, it really ups the stakes in the Marvel world as well by the end.
It makes, and it helps to, it does it in a subtle way, but it helps to get you onto the Civil War without it feeling clunky when it when Civil War suddenly starts.
Right, then you get to Civil War, which is almost like Avengers and a half.
Yeah,
you know, and like, well, how are they going to make this movie work and be a Captain America movie while having all these characters?
Yeah,
someone's going to get lost, and it still is a Captain America movie while still introducing Spider-Man, for crying out loud, while really you know, getting all these other relationships together, and everyone is, you know, while having that great Ant-Man scene at the airport, you know, and what they do, the airport fight, that shouldn't have worked. That should have just been a mess. But, you know, they
good direction there,
yeah,
it's well staged,
Nice and bouncy, still had a lot of heart to it, and yeah, so I'm for all three of those. I would, you know, some people would say the Godfather trilogy if there wasn't for the third movie,
but then that would be a duology.
Yeah, but do you then like grade on a curve and just go, okay, how many points do you give Godfather, how many points do you give Godfather 2, and then we got to take off points for 3, but now you're mean scoring the 3 of them.
Well, still, the Godfather 1 and 2 are the only film and its sequel to have won the Academy Award. So,
oh, is that right?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. So take that, every other movie.
Because those are two great movies.
Okay. And now we're...
favorite director.
Favorite director. Is it back over to me?
Sure.
Now, this is just favorite, not necessarily the best. But this is, I'm the most excited when I see a movie coming out from this director. Mo Schlubman.
Yeah.
Yeah. it's
he's a working director. I know that he's not a... fancier.
Yeah,
has
you
a lot
couldn't
of flair.
Ask for Mo. That's his on his business, his business cards.
But whenever he's given a movie to do, you always go, it's a Schlubman.
It's a Schlubman. Yeah. You know, even Alan Smith, he goes, I don't know. I would say for that, Edgar Wright would be.
Oh, yeah. I could see you picking Edgar Wright.
Yeah. I mean, he's, you know, Shaun of the Dead, Hot Fuzz, did not care for World's End. But I didn't care for the last third of World's End.
Yeah.
The first two were fine. Scott Pilgrim is one of my very favorite films.
We know that.
And Baby Driver is looking good from the trailer. And I love Spaced. I loved his TV show. I know not talking about that. But
that's fine.
Has done some really great music videos, too. Mm-hmm. Give those a look. In fact, there's one with Noel Fielding. And I forget the name of the band, but it's him in a car as the getaway driver waiting for some other actors that you'd know.
Fun Lovin' Criminals, is that the band?
No, it isn't. Okay. It is not. And he asks for how long they're going to be. They give him a time. He looks up a CD, puts it in, plays, and is just enjoying himself in the car while waiting. And I saw that, and when I saw the Baby Driver, where the guy also listens to music, and he's a getaway driver, it's like, I think this is the same damn thing. He's like, he's taking the video thing, and he's made a movie out of it.
Ah, interesting.
Fantastic. But yeah, I love me some Edgar Wright, and I was very disappointed, as I said earlier, that he did not do Ant-Man, because I would love to have seen his Ant-Man.
Mm-hmm. I heard he did Ant-Me.
Whoa.
My favorite director. Oh, do you have more to say? You want to talk about?
The only other thing I'll say is the first time I saw Shaun of the Dead was in San Diego Comic-Con, and both him and Simon Pegg were there and talked afterwards. It was nice. They had they dragged in this giant crucifix from like an Exorcist movie that was there and just were like hanging off of it while they were talking. And then I went to see Hot Fuzz in Seattle, and they were there as well.
Okay.
And showing Bullet beforehand, and they came out and scolded people for laughing at scenes from Bullet.
Good for them.
Yeah. But they were wrong, because you have to laugh at that fax scene. It takes forever.
It does. It's not even fax. It's a telex, because there wasn't fax in those days.
Yeah, that's right.
It sounds to me, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, but it sounds...
I lit my life like a candle in the wind.
It sounds to me like you are in Edgar Wright's pocket. So I'm a little suspicious now of your recommendations.
Okay.
And I do like Edgar Wright. Let me just say that Edgar Wright is one of the most thoughtful, well-planned directors that works in film. I think his movies are little beautiful constructions. Like all his transitions, everything he does, everything is there's always like it's not called foretelling, but you know, it's always
foreshadowing.
Forearmed is foreshadowed. And he always gives you like hints that you don't see them. Like, you'll see them if you go back and watch the film again.
Almost a little kissing to be clever thing. Like, in Shaun of the Dead, when they list all the things they're going to do that day, mm-hmm. and they list all the drinks they're going to do, there are actually scenes that will follow in the movie.
Yeah.
Where if you, you know, if he did that every time, you'd go, yeah, okay.
Yeah.
But he does new things every mm-hmm. time, and, mm-hmm. and that's
I just
good,
like,
that's...
But I do like that kind of construction that he brings to it. You know, his films, obviously, he spends a lot of time working out the details before he even puts...
Yeah, he doesn't get
coverage. Puts pen to camera.
He's not one of these guys that I'm going to shoot a two-shot, now I'm going to do the... Mm-hmm. You know, everyone's got their solo shot. I'll put it together later.
Yeah.
It's like clearly everything is mm-hmm. what it is.
It's not a Judd Apatow
Which
movie.
Is why it's surprising when you hear something like the ending of Scott Pilgrim was going to be so different. And you go like, oh, maybe he gets, maybe he gets endings wrong. You know, maybe that's...
Well, I think the ending of Shaun of... You know, it's a personal thing, but I think the ending of Shaun of the Dead is wrong. I think it's a to me, it's a wrong ending. But,
oh, okay.
And you know, you feel the way about World's End, which I do agree with you there. I think Hot Fuzz is his... that trilogy of films, speaking of trilogies, the Cornetto trilogy, I think the best one is Hot Fuzz. It's from beginning to end, it's the most consistent film where I don't feel like it flags, or I don't feel like it kind of cheats the ending a little bit.
And I will say it's the most screaming I've ever heard from an audience seen in Shaun of the Dead, where the one guy gets his stomach ripped open.
Really? They never saw Dawn of the Dead?
You don't expect it in a comedy. If you go into Dawn of the Dead, I think you expect it. Yeah. Whatever. But that was just, oh, this is a character we've grown to know.
Yeah.
And all this. And
why is he standing by a window?
He's like, don't stand by a window. How's it going to be? Yeah.
Don't stand by the window. Okay, well, I think my pick for director is an expected pick, but I'm going to say it anyway, which is
Moshe Lubman.
Once again, I know he's the working director. I know his films are a little, you know, workaday. You know, it's just, like you say, shot, two shots, we'll fix it in editing.
Yeah.
This is his mantra.
He's done transmogrifiers. He's done the schlumps. Gone with the Breeze.
The little green schlumps.
Starfight.
Gone with the Starfight. He's done them all. Whit Stillman.
Yep.
Which, you know, like I was going to make a little comment like Edgar Wright, oh, and he's directed so many films, but of course, Whit Stillman is the same. Whit Stillman is you know, he's much older than Edgar Wright, and he ended up in an unfortunate situation where he ended up in kind of development hell. And I think he ended up there accidentally, where he was kind of following, instead of having a project in place and working there, people were saying to him, oh, it'd be interesting if you did, well, that sounds like an interesting thing. Why don't you write a script for that? And we'll look at financing and stuff like that. So he'd work on the script, and then you start to plan, you know, where you're going to film it and everything. And then the money's not there, actually, you know. And it happened to him a couple times where he spent like 8 years working on different movie ideas, and nothing, you know, nothing came of it. So he realized when he started doing Love and Friendship, he's like, I'm not doing this film until money is there, and I know I have like at least financing available to get this film going. And that's, you know. And so what I like about Stillman, I mean, he doesn't bring any great finesse, unlike, say, Edgar Wright, who's a very showy director, and I don't mean that in a mean way, but Whit Stillman is very much place the camera, film the actors, and then for him, the purpose of the film is what the actors are saying and doing, and his movies are very nuanced, in that there's very, very rarely, if ever, does a character say, you know what's happening in this movie, blah, 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 you know, and that's a common thing in a lot of films where there's one character who's going to tell you what you're watching, even though you're seeing the film and I assume you're paying attention and not playing on your phone and you're seeing what's happening. It seems like every movie, there's some point in the film where someone needs to explain what you're seeing. Whit Stillman doesn't do that. His films sort of organically occur in front of you. And you kind of have to make guesses about the characters themselves. For instance, in Damsels in Distress, it's never stated outright that the character played by, Greta Gerwig, it's never stated outright that her character has mental issues. She is troubled with, you know, and so you see it in the film. You see her have a bit of a breakdown in the film, but no one ever says, you know, she's crazy. So sometimes she's going to have some problems, you know, and that's why she's kind of eccentric. No one ever says that. You just have to understand that that's part of her personality, that she's had problems, you know, OCD problems from her childhood onwards. These things are hinted at in the film, but they're never outright stated. You just kind of have to watch the film and kind of get her character. And I like that element of the movie. Like Metropolitan, for instance, his first film, which he basically self-financed, and shot guerrilla style in New York City, where they couldn't afford to pay for locations, so they would just film hotels from across the street and just have the actors walk out and down the street and just film them from across the road and not tell the hotel they're being filmed at. They borrowed people's apartments to film in. They used a museum, a room in a museum that was like an apartment in this museum. They used that a lot as a set, and that, you know, it just worked for them, you know. And so, and you know, he got an Oscar nomination for his script, because what is important in that film isn't the filming, but what the characters say to each other. This very witty, very you know, I appreciate that element of it. I wish that I was that smart, or I talk that way. But of course you can't, because your lines aren't written on pieces of paper for you. But once again, a movie where the characters, the story kind of emerges as you watch the film. And it's great to watch characters who are doing things that are frustrating to you and they can't see it.
Yeah.
You know, and they're making these terrible mistakes and you can see it and you're like, don't make these terrible mistakes. And it, you know, all his movies also fall into a category I love, which is romantic comedies. I'm just a sucker for those sort of things. I love watching people fall in love or fall out of love and fall in love again. I think that's great. And so, but what's Metropolitan has in it is it's a love story where no one falls in, or where people are in love with each other but don't know it, and their love comes at different inopportune times in the film, and it doesn't really resolve in that way, but it resolves in friendship, which is a different sort of love, and it's still interesting. Barcelona, you know, the other thing I like about him, and I think I said this last time, but I'll say it again, I like the fact that he's willing to write about a naval officer or a guy who's a salesman for an electric motor company, are not figures of fun, but are sympathetic characters. You know, there are people who just have jobs. They're just working stiffs, you know, trying to get ahead, you know, it's kind of like what Christopher Eigenman's character says in Last Days of the Disco, you know, when someone calls him yuppie scum, he says, what is it, the young urban professional? Those are all good things. Like, why would you not want to have that? You know, I'm a nightclub flunky. Why? That's not a yuppie, but you know, he just writes about people. And I think that's part of the criticism that people have of him, though, is the fact that he's writing about characters that we're not supposed to be sympathetic to. Debutantes and their escorts, a person, a salesperson in Spain and his naval officer brother, publishing, you know, rich kids interning as publishers at a company in New York City during the days of disco. Just things like that where it's supposed to be like, ugh, these, you know, trust fund brats or whatever, you know, oh, we hate them all, you know, but it doesn't matter who you are in life. There's problems, you know, you have trouble. It doesn't, you know, you can be a tow truck driver and have just as many romantic difficulties as a person who you're towing. So it doesn't, you know, and I just like the level of wit and.
What movie would you say start off with if you haven't watched any Witz Stillman movies?
Well, I think now Love and Friendship would be the starting point, which I think that's a very accessible film. It's a Jane Austen adaptation, so you're coming to it with a familiar kind of costume drama element to it. Mm-hmm. But it's still, because he's adapting an unfinished novel by Jane Austen, a juvenile novel, something that she wrote when she's still a teenager and was never refined by her or republished in her lifetime. He was able to kind of bring himself and insert himself into it. And in fact, when he was during shooting, there was an actor who came in to play a character and Stillman loved his acting so much that he started writing more scenes for this character to play, this actor to play, so he could have more of this great character because he loved what the actor was doing. So, I mean, it has elements of wit and elements of Jane Austen. And I think that's a very, very good film, very well acted. And then if I would go from there, and personally, I love Barcelona. I think that's a great film. It has it is a little long. And if you're not willing to like sit and just sort of let it happen in front of you, then you might have some trouble with it. I don't know. I think, you know, my daughter loves Last Days of Disco a lot. That's a film I like the least, I think, because there's the least kind of witty rapport and banter and stuff like that as there are in the other films. But I like them all a lot.
Okay, so give them all a watch.
Watch all of them.
I'm gonna go with I'm gonna throw a second choice in here just because I think it's worth doing.
Sure.
Listen, I like every Edgar Wright movie to some degree. This is a director whose movies are about half and half. Like almost, I would say that's about
okay.
Guess who I'm gonna say?
Sam Raimi.
I'm going to go, oh, you know, actually, I think, even though I dislike some choices, I think there's always something very interesting in a Sam Raimi movie. But this guy bores me as much as I love his work, and that's Woody Allen.
Oh, okay.
Whereas, like, when you get to, like, you know, I just wrote down a couple, just came to mind, Radio Days, or Purple Rose of Cairo, or Hannah and Her Sisters, or Zelig, you know, or Crimes and Misdemeanors. I mean, these are some of the best movies, you know, period. Some of my favorite, Annie Hall. Some of these are just,
what about his earlier funny stuff?
That's fine. That's fine. But these ones are just unique movies that couldn't have been made by anyone else.
No, that's true.
To the point where, like, now he seems to be remaking some of them that you're like, okay, I've seen this Crimes and Misdemeanors. He just redid it. But they're so good.
Is
but
that
then,
Point Match, whatever it is? Match Point.
Yeah, you know, there you are. And then he'll do a movie that I'll just go like, a snore, just can't. You know, they all respect him. He's the greatest professor there, and he's coming to town. But he's a bit of a troublemaker. He's like, with the ladies, and like, I don't care. But, you know.
I would agree. There's some films that are, you're like,
even
wow.
Even if you just made Zelig, that's fine. Then you make Purple Rose of Cairo, there you go. Yeah. And Her Sisters, well, there you've just done, you know, Crimes and Misdemeanors, boo-ba-da-boo, so on and so forth.
My personal favorite of his is Manhattan, which in retrospect is creepier than it should be, but it's such a great, great film in every way. Just well-made, well-paced. I love the fact that the look of the film is as important to the movie as the film itself.
Such an amazing opening.
Yes,
you know,
with the Rhapsody in Blue playing with the fireworks.
Yeah, made the good choice at the ending of how you end it. You don't you do a thing because you haven't seen it. But yeah, just a real unique take on so many different, you know. And when you think like, oh, he's got this one style. No, he doesn't.
No,
you know, it's all this stuff, and yeah. So that's my second choice.
Okay.
All right. Thanks. Now we're getting to.
Can I do my second choice for director then?
Sure, sure.
No, I just don't want to.
Sure.
I'm with you.
Mo Schlubman. And Boobs McGee. I like, by the way, that we got a little note from a listener on the show saying that they at their office were calling each other Boobs McGee for a week.
Yes.
And didn't go over well.
Driving their staff crazy.
Yeah. There could be a lawsuit or two involved in that. Favorite actress. Is that over to me or is that over to you?
I guess I'll take this one.
Go. Women shouldn't act.
I don't.
That's what we say.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It should be favorite actor.
Yeah, that's
should be one
true.
Category, you guys.
Also, yeah, it is just actor now. The
but
term
I said,
actress is a little out of date.
I said Cate Blanchett. I chose Cate Blanchett. Okay. She's just
I don't know why.
I don't
show
know why.
Work.
I just she's no, something that popped into my head.
I'll give mine then, real quick.
But I like her I think that she's good in everything she does in different ways. Like she always kind of brings like a real actorly, but not in a fake sort of way. Like I think she's great in The Gift.
Yep.
Like it just feels real. Like she feels like a real person. Like whether she's in The Gift or in Carol or in. You know, when I film I love The Aquatic Life of Steve Zissou. She's great in that movie. Life Aquatic with Steve Zissou. Sorry. Hey, can I go for a director? Can I put...
The Life Dyslexic. You
want
to go Wes Anderson as your second director?
Yeah.
I'll give you that. I love a lot of Wes Anderson
movies.
Yeah,
I do love Wes Anderson. I just think that I haven't seen every film she's in. I haven't seen like Elizabeth and stuff like that. But I'm quite certain if I saw Elizabeth, I would think, holy crap, what a great job by this person that probably not many people know at this point in her career. And she just like owned this movie because she just kind of comes into a film and owns it. But I don't think in a mean way. Like I remember reading an interview with William H. Macy and he said, acting with another actor, it's a competition. You have to own that other actor during a scene. And I thought, wow, that must be really hard to act with a person like that who's that aggressive coming at you in a scene. But I feel like she kind of does that too, but not in an aggressive way. She's just so good that she's so good and so real. You feel drawn to her in a film.
I would disagree with William H. Macy.
You wouldn't disagree?
No, I would.
Oh, you
would
disagree.
I think like, as an actor, you don't want to have the consistent look on you. You want to be able to do the give and take. And like
apparently
now I'm going to take the focus.
With you.
Now I'm going to give it to you, so that when I take the focus again, you'll go, ooh. But if the focus is consistently on you, then it's what Jack Nicholson does in a movie. And you're just like, who's watching him? it's fine. And then he gets a little old.
Yeah, I guess that's true.
You want an actor that like will really throw the focus over your way. So
who did you choose?
I chose someone who. Here's something I admire. I admire when someone can do both your standard films, not even standard, but you know, kind of an art house type movie, and then also do a genre.
Oh, okay.
And
I think I know where you're going with this.
All right, what do you think I'm going with?
ScarJo.
No.
Oh, okay.
Sorry. No, though she's fine.
Okay.
But I think she's absolutely fine, and okay. I think she delivers fine. I'm going with Jennifer Lawrence.
Oh, Jennifer Lawrence, J-Lo.
She can do like a little joy.
That's the wrong Jennifer.
Something, or she
J-Law.
Can, yeah, and she can carry a movie like that, and carry a movie like that as a character that's somewhat unlikable.
Yeah.
But you're still caring about her. And what's the movie that she did with? I could say this, and this doesn't help at all. With Bradley Cooper. Is that really
Silver
helps?
Linings Playbook?
There you go.
Super good in that film.
Yeah. As a
really
character
good.
That really taken a degree to the right or to the left, then you're just, who cares? And then can go and do a little X-Men movie and clearly be the best part of that film.
Until she's bored of it.
Until she's bored of it.
And doesn't want to be in her blue costume anymore.
Fair enough. And then it's hers, Jennifer Lawrence, and we're all fine with that.
Yeah.
No,
she's great. I mean,
or a Hunger Games.
Yeah, but look at that.
Which should not be good.
Which should not be good. And they were just so lucky to get her for those films because she was a kind of an unknown quantity, I think, when she
and
was
hired. She can show so much on her face.
Yeah.
And like yeah, I know there's a bunch of black goo that's covering everybody and they're all drowning and it's a big special effect. But I just care when I'm looking at her and like, oh, she's having a hard time.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm worried about her.
And most important, she could...
Like, good job.
She could look at PETA hiding on the ground as a rock and not burst into laughter. That is acting chops.
What was this? I'm not sure.
Oh, in The Hunger Games. There's a scene where the male character is laying on the ground disguised as a rock.
Okay.
Because that's his thing. And she sees him and she doesn't, as an actress, she doesn't just go, oh my God, what are you doing? She just plays the scene.
Very nice.
I just think that's so admirable. Yeah, I really like her in Silver Linings Playbook. She's very good in that film. And she's also really good in, as the, once again, in a not completely sympathetic role in, I don't know if you said this, but in that film.
Joy?
Not Joy. The other one that she did with David O. Russell. The one about the con. American Hustle.
American Hustle.
Yeah. Once again, very good in that role as the wife.
That's the movie she's in with Bradley Cooper.
Pretty much a whirlwind
again,
of a whirlwind
you know,
of destruction.
That movie with Johnny Depp and Helena Bonham Carter. What's the name of that film again?
All of them.
Yeah. So now we're moving on to Best Actor. Oh, you're letting guys act now too. Okay, I'm going to be. I couldn't be more boring.
Go boring.
I couldn't be more dull.
I'm going to be boring too.
This is so dull.
Okay.
it feels so dull that I feel bad.
Okay.
I want to just move on with my life.
No.
Tom Hanks. I like Tom Hanks.
Tom Hanks.
I like a Tom Hanks.
Really?
And I'm going to tell you. Because I kind of...
Wilson!
Because I was a big... I didn't watch that movie.
Me either. I just know that line.
When I was a young man, there was a night on TV that I really liked. And that night had a show called Bosom Buddies, followed by Police
Squad. With
the
great Peter Scolari.
Yeah, with Police Squad after.
Police Squad, that's right. Very for a short time.
Right. And
Police Squad only lasted like...
Let me tell you.
6 months.
My dad didn't care for either of those. Mm. So it was a hard show to get to watch. I'd have to be at my grandparents to watch it. And I went like, I like both these guys. So when I saw Tom Hanks was in movies, I was like, oh, good for him being in movies.
Yeah.
And here we go. And he's in Splash. Let's go see that.
You think you're forgetting Bachelor Party?
I could not see that movie. I was too young.
I got to review that movie for CRTR Radio.
Oh, did you?
Yeah.
You must have been older than me.
Christopher Penn was also in that film. He was the Devil May Care roommate.
Good on him. I have not seen Bachelor Party. Okay. Is there enough nudity to make it worthwhile?
You know what? I don't really remember that film very well at all. I saw it a long time ago.
Very good. But Splash, he was very Tom Hanks-y in a way that... You know, could have been Bill Murray-y. It was that kind of era of that kind of arrogant guy.
Okay.
But he brought a heart to it that a lot
winsomeness.
Of, that other types did not.
Yeah.
That took it beyond what, say, a Dan Aykroyd would take it or someone who also had comedic timing.
Yeah.
And then when he branched out into doing like drama as well, you know, a lot of it was melodrama, but very, very good. Mm-hmm. And to this day, he's a very charming presence in films.
Yes. He, made the unfortunate decision to dye his hair a dark black for a Larry Crown, which I'm still having trouble getting past that decision.
Yeah.
But even that film was pretty good because he's such an appealing fellow.
Right.
That you're watching a movie, you're like, I like this guy.
I don't care about a Da Vinci Code, but I'll watch it for him.
I have not watched those films, but I...
No, they're not good.
I imagine they're...
They are not good. They're not.
Yeah.
But, he's still delivers.
They keep the pot a-boiling.
Yeah. I watched that Sully. That
I haven't seen that, but I'd like to see that.
That shouldn't be good, but he's fine.
I'm sure he's really good in it. Why shouldn't that movie be good? It's an interesting story.
You know it all. What can you make
I didn't
a
even
movie
know,
about?
I didn't know about that.
You didn't know about that a guy landed the
Oh,
the
I knew
plane?
About that, but I did not know that he went through like a huge turmoil after where they're
but
trying to
that?
Accuse
is
him
that
of...
Is that a whole movie? You know, Apparently that seems like, is. You know, here's the thing. You're getting in a plane,
Apparently
plane troubles. You can only milk that for so long. Land the plane.
Here's
and then everyone goes, hooray. And then people go, wait a minute. And then it's like, oh, I better go to trial. And then you go, that's a whole movie? It is. They made a whole movie about it.
Not only is it a whole movie, it was an IMAX movie. Mm. That's the crazy part to me. Like, isn't most of it people sitting in chairs talking to each other? I know there's like a plane crash part.
Here's what they do. They
camera goes out the window.
It's a little bit of a cheat.
Okay.
But he keeps having dreams. So you have these fantasy sequences where you see things over and over again. And they're good.
Speaking of Clint Eastwood, director of that movie.
Oh, very good.
Yeah.
Your favorite actor.
Okay, well, I'm going to A-B this.
We're prefacing this whole thing with like, these are things we like, not specifically the best in the world, but go ahead.
I'm going to A-B this. This is a favorite actor of mine. I just like him in everything I've ever seen him in. He doesn't act very much.
Right.
Because he's a small-time actor, and he's only been in Whit Stillman films, which is Christopher Eigenman, who always plays a smart-talking, kind of a fast-talking character. I can't even else explain him. He's always kind
Does
of
Does he walk the walk while he talks the talk?
He walks the walk while he talks the talk. In the first film, Metropolitan, he plays a wealthy layabout who just kind of, you know, he's really into this whole Deb season because it means a lot of free meals. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's, you know, a lot of free meals. So why not?
Sure.
You can get into parties and, you know, it's a good time. In Barcelona, he plays the naval officer, Fred, who is there to arrange leisure activities for the fleet that's coming into the harbor. And so he's checking out the bars and stuff like that. And he's checking out the women and he's just having a good time and stirring up some stirring up some trouble and, you know, has an interesting, you know. And he's even in Last Days of Disco as well. He plays a nightclub flunky
in that
movie. So you know, I just love him in those parts. Now, I'm going to admit that's a minority opinion of just me. So the other actor I chose, speaking of vanilla choices, was Tom Cruise, of all people.
Mm.
Because I think I think people underestimate his acting abilities. And I think...
Because they can't handle the truth.
Because they can't handle the truth. But I think that a Tom Cruise film, like if you go to see a Tom Cruise movie, you're going to see a good film. Even if you think, oh, that was so-so or whatever, it's still done like better than you think. Like, you can watch Oblivion, you'll be like, oh, this is going to be dumb. And you watch it like, well, that was actually pretty good. Like, you know, he carried it off. Like, because he's able to, through his force of will, his personality, Night and Day is another example. That's a film I love for an insane, I don't know.
Every time I see that movie come on, I go, Dave's going to be happy.
I haven't watched it for a while, but, if I noticed it was on, I would watch it. I would at least watch the first half of it. And he's just so good in that film. He just brings so much to that performance. I think no other actor could make that role work. But because it's Tom Cruise who's shooting Riley from Buffy in the leg, you're like, this is okay. It's Tom Cruise doing this. Everything's fine.
Yeah.
And I know that he is more Tom Cruise in a film than he is actor in a movie. But I think, you know, on July 4th of July, whatever, July 4th, Born on the 4th of July, and the one with the pool one that he did.
Quick
Color of Money. Color of
quick
Money.
Story about Born on the 4th of July.
Sure, sure.
I'm working as an usher in a movie theater.
Okay.
There's a fellow who comes in every day to see movies.
Yeah.
He comes out. That's the only movie he wanted his money back from.
Really?
Came out halfway through. And he went, he had to pee through a straw, he says to me. You know, like, how's that going to get your dick hard? And then walks off. And I went like, I bet that would not. Wait, is this why you're seeing movies? You saw Tremors 3 times. Is that something? Is that your thing?
Tremors will make your dick hard.
That's right.
I just, you know, like if you think of how many films he's made.
Yep.
And he's just sort of kept...
Until Edge of Tomorrow.
That's a great movie.
It's almost like a parody of a Tom Cruise movie.
But it's a great film.
He does good comedy in that bit.
He does good comedy. He plays a good coward in that film.
Yeah.
But he also, you know, sells the action in it. He just, you know, he's just very good. And I think people, because of the personal things like Scientology, which is very distasteful to many of us, we kind of write him off in a way. You know, I think he's not a perfect person, but I'm not judging him for what he does
in his own personal time. And by the way, he saves a lot of lives.
He is
that guy is out there being Batman at times.
He has rescued
maybe
people.
Maybe for the wrong reasons, but
he has rescued people in danger.
Yeah, maybe some people aren't in danger. Maybe
more than I've done. So, you know, I just think it's like to me, it feels
risky
weird.
Risky business, solid movie, and that's his first
solid
one.
Film.
Taps. Losing It. Sorry, Taps. Losing It Taps. Was I think his first film.
Taps.
Yeah.
Remember in Taps? Man, he stole that character. I fucking hated that guy in that movie. I so hated that character in that film. When I saw that movie, Christopher Hutton and Sean Penn, they were fine. Those were good guys, but that Tom Cruise character
really taps me out.
I hated him. And then he was in All the Right Moves. Like these are all
we can just keep listing
really
Tom
good,
Cruise.
Yeah,
movies
really
if you
good
want.
Really good roles.
How about Tropical Thunder? That was a fun film.
I just watched it. I did, you know what? I didn't see it when it came out. I just watched it on the weekend.
Mm-hmm. This weekend?
Yeah.
You didn't like it?
No.
Okay.
I was surprised. Enough. I thought, I've heard a lot of good things about it, and I watched it, I just thought it kind of fell flat for me.
All right.
And maybe because through osmosis, I knew a lot about the film. I knew Tom Cruise's character, for instance. From his movie Osmosis. And I don't know, I just felt like, eh.
All right, let's get back to good ones. Minority Report. That's fine.
That's a good movie.
We got a red ball. And we got a red ball here, too, so let's keep moving. favorite Criterion release. That was an odd one to put in there. Did Criterion sponsor this list?
I mean, they must have.
That's a strange thing. Favorite Coca-Cola product.
But they have released a lot of interesting films. They have released,
Well, no, I've got one.
Okay.
All right. So me?
Yep.
Spartacus.
Really?
Yeah, I like Spartacus. We used to act out a lot of scenes from Spartacus backstage at Theater Sports.
Okay.
Yeah. A lot of, you've trained well, Spartacus. A lot of doing business. And,
oh, I thought you were doing the snail and the
snail and oyster. Yeah, absolutely. You do that little bathing scene. Yeah, it's good stuff. And a lot of other more obscure references to it. But
that's interesting.
Yeah, I just like Kirk Douglas.
Yeah.
You know, and it's always nice now to know, like, of all the people that went, I am Spartacus.
Yeah.
He's lived to, 100 now? Like, he's really up there.
Yeah.
Like, all the rest are dead. Now it's just one Spartacus. No, there's no way. He outlasted them all.
All the other actors pretending to be Spartacus in that scene?
He is the sole Spartacus now.
Mm. He's not really Spartacus, though. You realize that. He's just an actor who played a role in a movie.
He's as old as Spartacus.
He's
old enough to have known the original Spartacus and talked to him about the part and really gotten some notes.
Yeah, got some notes. I'll take some notes on this.
All right. What's your favorite Criterion?
Okay, I was going to go with a dumb choice just because it's so repetitive, which was the Whit Stillman box set of Metropolitan, Barcelona, and Last Days of Disco. But I'm going to say instead.
Just to go for a box set, not an individual.
What's that, sorry?
You're going for box sets, not individuals.
Why not?
Okay, fair
enough. I'm going to stick with that. I was going to say last year Marine Bad, but actually that's kind of a pretentious choice. So I'm going to say, I'm going to say La Belle and La Bête, the Jean Cocteau film, La Belle and La Bête. That's what I'm going to say. That's the best. That's my favorite release.
All right.
Do you know that movie?
I do not.
That is such a magical film.
Sell me on it. Go.
Well,
pitch me.
When I was...
I'm a movie executive. So what do you got for me, Dedrick?
Do you remember when we were kids?
I do.
And you had to manually change channels. And so you would flick through and you would sometimes...
Yeah, except for that one guy down the street who had that box that you push all the buttons on.
Okay.
Living like a king while his parents had a key party upstairs.
Sounds great. Lucky guy.
Stay downstairs, kids. eat all the cheese whiz you want.
What a lucky guy.
And Ritz crackers.
You're making it more and more appealing. sometimes you'd stop on the French channel, see what's happening there.
Oh, you would.
Might see some boobs.
Oh, you would.
You might luck out, you don't know.
And you were like, why does CBC Quebec get to show nudity and CBC not Quebec not?
Because one part of the country is Catholic and the other part of the country are uptight Presbyterians.
I'm going to tell you a theory I have about Canadian film.
All right.
And this is my theory.
Sock it to me.
And this is my theory, which is my theory.
are you an elk?
I am. So here's what I think.
Yeah.
So in Quebec, the film industry is thriving. Mm-hmm. And they've actually got a market for their own. And films like Le Boys, you know, do amazingly well and they do great.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, why do they like to watch Canadian movies and English-speaking folks do not?
Yeah.
Here's why. Because CBC, which is the channel that you're all mandatorily able to have, in Quebec, would show you old movies with nudity.
Yeah.
So when you're a kid watching it, it's just like, oh, I want to watch this. Whereas they would the English, no dice.
No.
Who cares about Canadian things?
You got to see Carry On movies.
Yeah. Who cares about this Carry On movies, which had a little bit of nudity, I guess. You know. So they got into film.
Edited it.
And so you watch the film with the nudity, but it's actually a good film.
Yeah.
So you get more into film, and you're like, you're watching. Oh, this is really good.
Yeah.
And now I like movies, and like now we got a movie, and they were in French, obviously.
Yeah.
So now I'm gonna go see. We're making a French movie here in Canada. Oh, I like movies. There's probably some nudity in that. And if not, I also like movies. So they started seeing movies in Quebec, whereas in Canada, we're like, meh, no dice, don't like it. Movies are blah. Canadian movies are blah, boring. And so that's the situation. We thought of like Canadian film things as like Beachcombers.
Yeah.
That's what the CBC delivered to us.
Yeah.
Bunch of relic in a boat, whereas like it's good fun frolics with the art guy and his model over there.
Yeah. Because that's the French CBC was run by Boobs McGee.
Oh.
We didn't know that, but now it's. I was flicking around one day.
Why, that is.
And there's this movie playing, and I'll admit I came into it late, but there's a scene of a woman. She's going down a hallway of this house. There's torches along the wall of this house. It's black and white. There's a wind blowing, the curtains are blowing, her dress is blowing. She's floating down the hallway. I guess they had her on a cart and they're just pulling with a rope, but that's not in view. So, and then the torches in the hallway are being held by people's actual arms. Mm-hmm. And so they're sort of moving, they're sort of waving as she's going down this hallway, and this sort of feels slow motion shot going down the hallway towards you. And I just came upon this and I was just like, this is the most magical thing I've ever seen. I cannot believe what I'm looking at. This is so clever and so smart what they're doing here. And it is, it's Beauty and the Beast. It's a French version of it. It's directed by Jean Cocteau, the poet, the surrealist poet. And he just took his surrealism and he kind of put it into this film. And it's just a beautiful movie. I mean, the Beast looks great in it. For the time, the costume's great. And, you know, it tells the story in its own sort of the French version of it, I guess, because it ends a bit different than the English version does. But it's really wonderful. And it's just so fluky that you kind of stumble onto something like that. And then a little later, I happened upon Orfeu, his version of Orpheus, which has this wonderful scene of a character going through the mirror. But how they did that was they just used like a very still water, like a pool, like a square pool of water.
Yeah.
And then just had the character roll into it. And so it looked like they were disappearing into the mirror.
Oh, nice.
It's very cleverly done. That's another great film. And that, you know, what was great about that was it, well, made me, you know, want to know who Jean Cocteau was. So then you go find out who Jean Cocteau was. And then you discover about surrealism and, more importantly for me, with Dada. And then I went, you know, I started learning about, you know, Tristan Tzara and Max Ernst and then Francis Pacabilla, the Spanish painter whom I just love so much. And I was able to see when I went to Paris at the Pompidou Center, see his fabulous paintings because he's just so great. So I just love his sense of humor and everything. And yeah, it's just like, so just something like that, you know, where you just stumble upon as a teenager, it just opens your life up to like so many more experiences. So you're...
Oh, that's wicked. You know,
but anyway, so I'm going to choose that one.
Nice. Well done. All right. Going from there to favorite film you've seen so far this year. And so I'm going to go with like, is it me or you?
You can.
All right. I'm going to go with like in theaters. My the most fun film I've seen so far this year. Not the most recent, but the most fun.
Yeah, that's
Would be Lego Batman. I really enjoyed Lego Batman.
Yeah, it was pretty good.
Yeah, it had a lot of good bounce to it, a lot of imagination. Mm-hmm. I like they handled the relationship between Batman and Batgirl well, I thought, much more maturely than R-rated Batman movies this year have, you know, where they're having sex on a rooftop.
Ugh.
And I think they put a lot of care into those movies, and it shows. And it's rare that a movie can be enjoyed by all ages, but I think that one definitely can. So that's my weird choice.
The reason I said yuck is I've had outdoor sex, and it is rarely pleasant.
Mm.
Rarely pleasant.
Well, you always are doing it in the gravel
pit.
I think that is, because you got all your Doctor Who fantasies, so you want to have sex in a quarry and just recreate those magical scenes.
Sex in a quarry, wearing a big scarf. Let me lay my scarf out for us. You know what? I don't feel like I've seen enough movies this year, new movies, to make a judgment. I did see the Lego Batman film.
Okay.
The problem was I really wanted to see it. It was my birthday, so it was my choice to go for dinner and then go to that movie. And I was really sick, though. I had a flu, and I fell asleep during part of the film. And I learned something about Lego movies. I don't like the fact that their faces don't have expression.
Mm.
And I started feeling really bored. And it might have just been that I was, because I was tired and sick.
Yeah.
I wasn't really getting the full thing. There was elements of it I liked a lot, but it just I started realizing that their expressionless, drawn-on face just didn't... Just didn't grab me.
You know what? I'm going to throw a little spoiler down for Lego Batman right now.
Okay.
Here we go. I'm going to say this.
Sure.
Go ahead. 5 minutes of you don't want to hear a Lego Batman spoiler. This is my thing on that.
Yeah.
So the way they use the Phantom Zone in there. Seriously, I'm going to spoil something.
Okay.
But this is just the theory.
Yeah.
So the Phantom Zone.
Okay.
When you get sent to the Phantom Zone, mm-hmm. it's not like the Phantom Zone in a typical Superman movie where it's you're just in the middle of nothingness.
Yeah.
It was all characters that were dead, that were killed in other movies.
Okay.
And the way, when you arrive there, they judge you and go, how villainous are you? And they play your life back and go, you're a real villain, or you're not that much of a villain.
Yeah.
I don't know if you belong here or not.
Mm-hmm.
So you're like, well, that's not the Phantom Zone.
Yeah.
That's hell. And I'm like, is that hell? Because like they...
But isn't that what the Phantom Zone is sort of a stand-in for?
Is it though? Because
judgmental, but these are all other dimensions.
But these are all characters that were definitely killed in their own movies.
Okay.
every one of these characters died in their movies.
Hans Gruber's there, and
well, you didn't see Hans Gruber, okay. But you know, all the other characters definitely were killed. Hmm. And when Batman shows up there, you know, they give a scanner. The Joker scans up like, oh yeah, you should be here. And it's almost like a Saint Peter type that's there, that's like welcoming you to this world. And when they escape, it's like, I've got to get them back, or the higher ups are going to be upset. Who are the higher ups in the Phantom Zone?
Yeah.
Why is there a system going on here? And then I was thinking, yeah, but you know, the first time they mention it in the movie, it's General Zod that was just sent to the Phantom Zone. I'm like, oh shit. But to people who just know Superman now, General Zod was killed by Superman in his movie. Okay. And so he's, and you never actually see him in the movie, which is strange because they say he was just sent to the Phantom Zone, but he's never in the Phantom Zone. It's just odd. But yeah, that was my question, was like, is the Phantom Zone hell? Because that seemed to be laying that out.
I guess it
wasn't all Kryptonians. Yeah. You'd normally see like a whole bunch of villains from Krypton, but no, it was like, well, why is the guy from Lord of the Rings here? Why is Sauron here? How did King Kong end up in this place? He didn't get sent to the Phantom Zone.
What you're looking for are out of trademark, out of copyright villains.
Oh, I don't think
so. Moriarty is there. The Hunchback of Notre Dame. Is he a villain? I don't know. I guess
no, those were all copywritten characters in there.
Which were?
Well, Sauron definitely is.
I don't think he's copyright.
Lord of the Rings is under copyright. Try to do your own Lord of the Rings movie. Okay. You can't. Yeah, absolutely.
But it's older than James Bond.
Okay, well, you had the Daleks that were there. They're definitely under copyright.
Yeah, true.
I'd say every character. King Kong. I would say King Kong is not public domain. Try to do a King Kong movie. Good luck. I don't think you can. Seriously, any of the characters that were in there were all, you know, Gremlins, definitely.
Yeah, yeah. No, those are newer characters I can understand, but characters from the 1930s?
Though for some reason, they couldn't name the Daleks, which was interesting. They called them the British Robots.
Okay.
And I was like, there's something about that. Oh, by the way, I found out why you always have to have the Daleks every season in Doctor Who, because you lose the copyright otherwise. The rights to them.
Okay.
The copyright reverts back to the owners of the Daleks if you do not have them.
Who are the owners? Terry Nation?
I'm not sure.
Okay. The creator of the Daleks. What were we doing?
Favorite film so far this year.
Okay. I don't know. Let's go on.
All right. What's the worst film that you've seen this year? Or the film you disliked most this year, because that's mine.
You're going to say Logan.
Nope.
Oh, well, I'm surprised. Worst film I've seen this year. Film I like that. You talk about it. Let me think about this. I didn't really answer these because maybe I'm like you with most overrated. I don't really...
Yeah, here's my problem.
But what film did you like the least this year?
The film I liked the least was a film that started really strong.
Okay.
Really strong.
Okay.
And then just like about three quarters of the movie, way through the movie, I turned to my sister-in-law, I
said, boy, Suicide Squad is terrible.
but there's something to it. I turned to my sister-in-law and I'm like, I should leave now while I still like this movie because I know where this is going.
Oh, okay.
And I'm going to get really fucking pissed off.
Okay.
And it was Life.
Oh, okay.
It was a space movie.
Yeah.
And just like, it takes a cheap turn and you're just like, really? Because you're so smart up until this point.
Okay.
And everyone's so smart.
Yeah.
And then it just, okay.
Now they do dumb stuff.
We're going to do
some dumb stuff to get the plot moving.
Bum, 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 bum. You know, it's just like, okay. Yeah. Okay.
I like that you just spoke about the whole film in song.
Yeah, it black mirrors it at the end. It's got to give you, you know, this ending. It's like, fuck off.
Yeah, see, that's the thing. Like, we were talking about the last week, we were talking about quite a few films where it has a negative or has a depressing ending or a downbeat ending.
Yeah.
Which I don't mind. I'm not against that.
Right.
But
this episode of this show is going to have a very depressing ending.
Oh, that's terrible to hear that. Yeah. I'm sorry to hear that.
Yeah.
I hope it's not forced.
In an unrelated story, this is my goldfish, who I love very much. Oh. That's here on the table.
Oh, okay.
Just, I'm leaving on the edge of this table here.
What's his name?
What's his name?
Yeah, what's the goldfish name?
Fishy Goldman.
Fishy Goldman?
Yeah, okay. He's also my agent.
Explains your career.
Yeah. It's weird that he can smoke that cigar underwater.
It is quite impressive, actually.
By the way, I love that you actually make eye contact with the mime fish.
What? He's right
you
here.
You did this with Boobs McGee, too. Well, like a lot of,
why wouldn't I?
There's a lot of object work you did.
Why wouldn't I? All right. Sitting right on the table, you told me.
Very good. Anyway, I hope nothing happens to my fish that I really adore here.
Yeah, be careful with that.
Okay, all right.
So, I don't like it. I don't like a downbeat ending that's forced. It feels like they just are like kind of pushing that in like at you, like, you know what I mean? Like, so it
makes your movie seem smarter. It's like, good for them. They went with a sad ending. Good for them. That's smart.
They think that, but it's fake. No, it's a fake, fake feeling. And you just feel like, yeah, they're just doing it for their own jollies and not, and it doesn't serve the story. You know, if you have a downbeat ending, you want that downbeat ending to serve the story. It has to either resonate or have some element that, you know, that's carried through the film. And when you get to that point, you're like, well, what else could happen? This is inevitable. Kind of like, well, I don't want to spoil the endings of films, but yeah. You know, when you have that ending, I want that ending to feel like it's earned, that this was the only way it could happen.
Well, we talked about this with Alien, that the original ending of Alien was she does all this stuff, fights the alien, sends it outside. Then the alien ends up killing her at the end. And that was the original ending of Alien.
Yeah. Terrible.
Terrible. Yeah. That's right. But it would be, how could it have ended any other way?
I suppose.
You'd look at the movie and go like, there you go. Oh, by the way, nice not starting a franchise then. Good job, genius.
I don't think that's earned, because when you have a character that's striving to survive, and in the last part of the film, you take that away from the audience.
Yeah.
That's a real fuck you to the audience.
Yeah, because you're relating to this character throughout, and you're along for the ride. And yeah, it's...
I was watching something interesting I was doing a YouTube video the other day, and it was the person was saying when, this was his opinion, but when did The Simpsons go wrong? And he chose this...
When you got too old for it.
That's part of it, maybe. But he chose this episode where Seymour Skinner is revealed to not actually be Seymour Skinner, that he was an imposter playing that character.
Some people say that, yeah. That's
and he felt like that was a cheat. Like, it was saying to the audience, you've invested all this emotional energy into this character, and now we're going to take that away from you. Ha ha, what an idiot you are for liking this character as much as you did. And that would be sort of the same in Alien if you do that. You're giving people this character, Ellen Ripley, who's very brave, who's making good choices throughout the film, unlike a lot of other characters who are not taking it seriously and, you know, are ending up in bad situations. And she is able to fight and strive and, you know, and we're rooting for her through this thing. We're investing ourselves in this character. And at the end of the film, to take that away from us and just give us the middle finger? No, that would be a terrible ending, you know? So you have to judge when you're doing that in a film, like what is the audience investing in and what are they wanting? Like, what are they expecting from this situation? Like, sometimes a movie, it can have a downbeat ending, but you knew that was going to happen. You knew the character was making terrible choices that were leading that character to this point in the movie. Like, on the other hand, you had a character that was making the right choices and was making, you know, working towards a positive outcome. And then in the end of the film, you just turn that around and say, you know, screw that character. They died. You know, like, to me, the first thing, the problem with that is that you're not allowing the character to shape the film or the work. Like, any good story, the characters drive the story. You can't have a plot, the plot drive the characters, because then no one is working, no one's acting as they would in real life. Mm-hmm. You know, like, people, like, in our lives, we don't have a plot that drives our lives. We have our lives.
We make up a plot.
We make up a plot. And part of that plot is accidental or intentional, but we are working towards that. And our personality, it directs how we work our way toward whatever outcome, whether it's a good outcome or a bad outcome. We might have a personality, we might have personal weaknesses that cause us to fail in our endeavors. And that's a natural outcome of that character. But if that character is working towards something and then you just twist it because you want a negative ending because that makes you look smart, then you're cheating the characters and you're cheating the audience. You know, so yeah, I feel I haven't seen that film, so I can't.
It's what bugs me about horror movies, where it's like, what's the deal? You know, it's this omnipotent force, it can't be destroyed. Oh, but wait a second. We found out something. What's that? If you put a hat on him, that gets real. Okay. And then everyone makes the big sacrifices to get the hat on him and puts the hat on him, and it's a big fight, and the hat finally goes on him. The hat. And it's like, oh, we finally beat him. Next scene, we're going walking down the street. Hey, it kills you. What about the hat? That was bullshit. Mm-hmm. Oh, well, fuck you then, movie.
Yeah.
You know, you've laid out your rules, and now you flip the board over and...
Yeah.
Fuck you. By the way, where The Simpsons, I think, started to go downhill. I don't think that's the traditional one that people think. Here's where I think it might have. And again, I believe there's many good episodes in each season. If you go, that was the worst season. Yeah, how about this episode? Well, like that one. Yeah, that's fair. And for the most part, it goes downhill when you get too old for it.
Okay.
But it was where there was a movie parody. And I think Ray Romano playing a Frankenstein monster, but very at least there was a Frankenstein monster.
Okay.
And the monster gets an erection in the middle of the basketball game. And everyone's like, oh, no, the monster is pointing at his erection. And
this is Simpsons?
This is a fantasy sequence. Okay. They're watching like a movie in the show or some such.
Okay.
And I was like, nope, Frankenstein shouldn't get a boner in The Simpsons. Nope.
It's not surfable.
Nope. It's tough that you go like, where's the line?
Yeah.
The line.
That's the line you cross.
That would be the line.
That when you cross, that's the line. So I'm not going to.
Sure.
Worst film this year. We'll just go on. And if I think of something, we'll come back to it.
Okay. Then we're going to go from that to most recent film you've seen. How was it?
Okay, well, you answer this one.
Okay, I'm going to go to the one I was going to do last week and the one I saw last night.
Yeah.
So last week I would say The Fate of the Furious, which is a very formula movie.
Sure.
But they really give it to the formula. Yeah,
those films are fine.
There's a scene with zombie cars in it. That's fucking great.
Yeah.
That's just great. Like everyone in the audience is like turning to each other going, how about that? That's a thing. Oh, wow. Huh. You're like, you're delighted that it's just so, over the top.
Yeah.
And then everyone starts talking and it's dumb, but it's fine. They're talking about family and how important family is. And the thing about Fast and the Furious, like if it was World War II, then, and then World War III happened, Hitler would be a good guy in World War III and would help you out. Cause that's the way it goes with every one of the movies. Like, this person's the most reprehensible, killing people you know. And then the next movie, he's not so bad.
Yeah.
And then the next movie, they're really a good guy. Anyway. But the movie I saw last night was Colossal.
Oops. Yeah.
And
I heard that's very good.
It's quite good. Yeah. And it's one of these movies where you don't want to say too much. Like, you watch the trailer and go, well,
I know about it because I made a mistake of reading a review of it. So I know.
Well, you know what? I bet you still don't.
Okay.
Because you go with what the premise is and you see the trailer and go, got it. Understand. I see where you're going with this. And it's actually about something else. I feel it's about something else.
Okay.
And I think it delivers on that kind of thing much very well.
Yeah.
And it's a film that I think you will talk about afterwards. Mm. And it's just a good, big, interesting idea.
Okay.
That, again, it's one of these films that shouldn't work, but it does. And there's a scene that happens in a bar about three quarters of the way through the movie that I think, again, my sister-in-law Victoria said, this looks like a scene that someone wrote for another movie and put in this movie because it's a good scene.
Yeah.
And it is a good scene, but it's not necessarily a good scene in this movie for who this character is.
Okay.
So I would agree with that, but I would definitely say go see it, and it's a good film to see in a theater.
Okay.
Okay.
I do want to see that film.
What's the most recent film you've seen?
Well, I'm going to go from last week.
Star Wars?
The movie Star Wars, 1977. It's the last time I watched a movie.
You went, if you can't top this, I'm not seeing
it. Yeah, I don't want to see
it. Is it better than Star Wars? Well, I'm not going.
Yeah. No, the movie I saw and was Everybody Wants Some! !
Okay, and what was that?
It's a Richard Linklater film, and it's about, it's basically people keep saying, oh, it's a continuation of Dazed and Confused. It's not. It has nothing to do with Dazed and Confused. But basically, it's like kind of a college comedy. Mm-hmm. It's about the main character is a boy who comes to a college, and he's part of he's gone there on a baseball scholarship. So he's coming there to play in the baseball team. And the baseball team have their own kind of a house that they live in. Because of some shortage of space in the campus, so they've been housed in these houses, and then that's it. And so the film kind of has a countdown. It's 3 days till school starts, and so everyone's just sort of getting to know each other and kind of get used to this new life, leaving home and coming to this new place, and kind of meeting their teammates and trying to meet girls and going to bars or going to nightclubs and stuff like that. And it's based in 1980, so you have this sort of different sort of time, different sort of look. And I have to say, I really, really, really liked it. I liked it a lot. And I've read a lot of bad reviews of it, or heard a lot of bad things about it from people. Some of the complaints, I can understand. There are people who are saying, well, there's not enough female roles in it, which I guess is a complaint, but it's about a male baseball team. So it's kind of, unless you had like a girl who is the uniform girl or something, it would just be kind of, you know, it'd feel kind of forced if they did that. But there's a very good female character that the main character meets, who's a performing arts major. And it's nice to have these two kind of opposites come together in the film because, you know, jockey culture is a lot different than what you'd find in theater culture, you know. The film is very testosterone. There's a lot of male dynamics in the film. But I really like watching stuff like that, especially now that I'm working in a warehouse with a lot of other guys. Because it's not something that I've really experienced. I didn't really play on sports teams when I was growing up because I was a terrible athlete. Because I'm just a lanky giraffe who can't control his limbs. So it's very hard to play sports when you're like that. And even now, I'm pretty terrible. And I like to play sports. I'm just terrible at it. So I'm not someone who people want on their team necessarily, but you know, my heart's in the right place. Just the ball is in the wrong place. But
please invite David onto your team.
No, it's fine.
Especially if your team's name is the Lanky Giraffe.
The Lanky Giraffes. I belong on that team. But this movie, yeah, it's just super competitive guys, you know, all trying to like strive against each other. And, you know, but there's also that element of that they're a team, so they have to also work together. Yeah. So you have that, you know, that natural male dynamic of, you know, wanting to best everybody else and be the best thing there is. But then you also have to take that urge to be the best. And these are all people that are the best that there were in their, where they were in their lives before they came to the school. They were the best pitcher. They were the best outfielder, the best shortstop player. That's why they've got the scholarship. And that's why they're at this college that has in the film the best baseball team, best college baseball team in the nation. So this is a team that already has championships, trying to keep themselves in that place, bringing in players that are going to renew the team, and they want good players, and they want these players to fit into this team culture. Now, for males, the way you get people to work in a culture is you tease each other until everyone agrees on a culture, like on a way of behaving.
Yeah.
If you want hard workers, you tease people who aren't hard workers, and you make sure that they know how you feel, that they're kind of, you know, just shirking and not doing their fair share and putting the work on other people's backs. No one ever outright confronts people, or very rarely outright confronts people. I think in terms of, you know, when males are together, it's more a case of guidance through teasing and other things like that, jokes and stuff like that, that kind of keep the stuff rolling. So no, there's never an out and out confrontation, because that would make it too awkward and too on the nose. You know, you kind of want to get people working together without saying how you want people to work together. And the same in this movie, there's a lot of that in it and stuff. So it's kind of interesting to watch. And there's some really kind of smart scenes where there's a character who's a pitcher, and he's talking with the other character, the main character, who's a pitcher as well. And he says, you know what, and the first thing this guy gets when he comes to the house is, I hate you, you're a pitcher. This guy's a batter. So they're enemies, right? Even though they work together in a team, the pitcher kind of is outside of the rest of the dynamic. He very rarely catches the ball. He very rarely throws to base. They don't hit very well, because that's not what they're there for. They're there to get other players to not hit the ball, or to hit the ball into bad situations. And so this guy's talking. He says, you know, you're a pitcher. You have to own that. You have to admit, I'm weird, and just live with that. And once you realize that, everything's going to go, you know, you're just going to get into that groove and everything's going to be great for you. And it's referenced a few different times in the film, not just about being a pitcher, but being a person, being a young adult growing up, that you have to accept who you are and, you know, just get into that zone of who you are and everything will be fine for you. You know, that's a hard thing for people. Like when you leave high school, you're leaving a place where you have lived your life based on what other people think about you.
Right.
Because that's a lot of high school. We're always so self-conscious of ourselves. And we want everyone to like us and people to think well of us, that we're always trying to make ourselves likable and acceptable to people in all kinds of different ways. So when you leave high school, here's an opportunity for you to become a new person, to slough off that past of a person eager to please, and because someone who wants to be themselves and to be a theater major or be a baseball player or be whatever. I mean, a lot of these guys aren't going to go on to professional careers. They're going to have a fun time in college, hopefully learn something in school and get some sort of major that carries them on into their lives. They're just lucky enough that they're talented enough to have a scholarship. And so it's actually a really good film. It's a typical Richard Linklater film, again, where you're like, what's the story here? Like, what's going on? You know, the story is
the characters.
Is their journey, from those 3 days of to this to that moment of acceptance of you know, it's a good film. I recommend it.
Yeah, you got me thinking, though, about high school and stuff there with that. Just wondering if, like, you know, how you care about the approval of everyone around you.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, I mean, just school itself, you're going from class to class hoping to be – you're being judged by teachers, right? That's your thing.
That too.
They are literally grading you.
Mm-hmm.
But you're also hoping for their approval when they call on you and you want to get the that's good. Good for you.
Yep.
And so – if you go through five classes a day where you're just going for approval and want approval and want approval, then when you leave, it's tough to get rid of that wanting approval. And then you're probably like having other kids saying stuff about you, like, no, I want their approval too now. It's all about that, you know? And then you're probably being told by your parents, the way to get into college and do all this other stuff is you got to get that approval as well. Huh, that's interesting. That's a topic for another time. Okay. So
the fact that you're thinking that way shows me that you're in the wrong paradigm. You should see the movie and tell me what you think of it.
Okay.
It's like I say, it's got some bad reviews. And I think partly because you know, jock culture.
I'm just thinking about real life right now.
Jock culture is something that we don't, that none of us, not a lot of people, I think, who review films experienced in their you know, as they're growing up.
Yeah.
Like, I never played on teams, like I say. It wasn't until I started working in a warehouse that I could really see the male dynamic in action. And I find it really fascinating. I mean, I'm part of it, but I'm also kind of removed from it in a way because I'm so much older than a lot of the other people.
Yeah, these are all, there's topics for future shows here. Most anticipated upcoming film?
I have a lot.
Okay, I'll just go with mine quick then. Mine would be Baby Driver.
I thought you'd say that.
Film. Yeah. The side one, Spider-Man Homecoming. I'm looking forward to a Spider-Man movie that I'm not going, I don't know. I don't know about this one. Okay, I've had three in a row where I wasn't sure.
Yeah.
Okay, this one looks like it's going to be fine.
So even though it's bound to disappoint me because I have such a hate relationship with this director, but Luc Besson's Valerian.
Okay.
Whatever it is, 1,000 Cities. I love those books, and so what I've seen of the film, I think it looks really great. It's super colorful.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's not like the kind of normal films have got where they're just so, everything's gray or slightly steel blue, and that's the two colors they have in the whole entire film. This movie is like this vast array of colors, and it looks really interesting. And neither actor in the film are like favorites of mine, but they both look so neat in their costumes and stuff. It really look forward to it. Guardians of the Galaxy 2, which is that's going to slake my thirst very shortly.
Mm-hmm.
It's coming out soon, but that's one I've been looking forward to. Thor Ragnarok, just because of the Waika Titi connection there, makes me, even though I thought the first one was so-so and I thought the second one was a piece of garbage, I'm really looking forward to this one just for the director of it.
So. Oh, they look like so different than the other ones. I didn't mind the other ones, but yeah, I think this is very definitely a different vibe.
And then Baby Driver, yes, I'm looking forward to that film. Although strangely enough, the trailer, the entire length of the trailer does not reference the Simon and Garfunkel song that it takes its title from.
There's two trailers. Maybe you've only seen the one.
I'll only watch one. I'll never see another trailer of that film.
Okay.
And then another film I'm curious to see is, it's called My Entire High School is Sinking into the Sea. It's an animated film by a cartoonist named Dash Shaw, and it's about his high school sinking into the sea and the students struggle to get out of their school. Yeah, it sounds kind of interesting.
That does.
It's running, it's a very low-key, you know, moving around sort of film, place to place. So it's playing at the Pickford Center in Bellingham. On May 5th, so that's coming up pretty soon. So I plan to go down to see it.
May the 5th be with you.
Thank you.
Okay, now we're moving on to, because we got to get through this. Come on, guys.
Okay.
Most romantic film. Now you're the guy who likes, film that always makes you cry.
Film that always makes you cry.
All right, what makes you cry?
I'm not a big crier at movies. I shouldn't say that. I do cry at movies a lot, but I cry so often I can't think of a film.
Yeah, I cry a lot too. I'm going to go Spider-Man 2. I always cry at the end of Spider-Man 2.
Really?
Yeah. Not Amazing Spider-Man 2, where I cry going, why did they do this stupid movie? But no, I like that.
You didn't like that it played Itsy Bitsy Spider?
I like the Go Get Him Tiger. Okay. I like that he's found happiness, and mm-hmm. I like it all.
Yeah, that's where it should end. Shouldn't be a trilogy. I'm going to say It's a Wonderful Life.
Yep, I will agree with that.
Because it's actually going to be my next answer, too.
Very good. What's your most romantic film?
It's a Wonderful Life. The scene with the scene where they are talking when she kind of lures him into the house by playing, and you know, when he's walking past and he comes walking up, and it's a very tense sort of scene where he's kind of angry about something. He just feels so frustrated, and she's created this sort of fantasy in her mind. And it has one of the greatest scenes of all time, which is at the beginning of the film, which I missed the first time I saw it, which is her whispering into his.
I
shouldn't say I missed it. Actually, that's where I saw the film, and that's what made me like this movie so much.
It's a very good scene.
Where she whispers into George Bailey, I will love you. See, even that.
It's making me weepy.
So, yes. I just think that film, and so, yes, when he walks up and then he gets mad and he's so mad at her and she's crying, and then he just can't help himself. He loves her. Even though he's trying to tear himself away from this town that he's grown up in, his love for her is so overwhelming that they just go into this great embrace, and that makes me cry, and also it's so romantic.
Nice. All right. What's the most romantic movie?
Moonrise Kingdom.
Ooh, okay. That's interesting.
Yeah.
Cool. Show your work.
Show my work. Well, once again, it's a romantic comedy, I guess, in a way, but the romance between the two characters, which are preteens, so it's sort of weird in a way, but the fact that I love when he sees her at the school play when they're doing Noah's Ark and she's dressed in her costume as a bird of some sort. And he says to her, "What are you?" or something like that. And she responds, like the woman goes, "Never." One girl says, "It's not none of your business." But she responds to him.
Yeah.
And that's like such a key moment for him because it's the first time someone's paid attention to him. If we can see his backstory of being a foster child in this sort of very unloving situation, we can suddenly see this connection between them and they start this romance. And they act on it. You know, they need to escape their lives from, you know, her parents that aren't paying attention to them and his life, which is just hell. And they start on this romantic journey together to get married. And then there's this is fantastic in every way. The great scene.
They take some risks with it, too.
They take, yes.
Yeah. They're like, oh, I don't know if we should be.
Yeah.
You know what? Yeah.
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 That's a great film. I think that's.
And I love the scene. Sorry. I love the scene with Bill Murray just pulling up the tent, just grabbing the tent. And just like as an adult, just like, I'm going to wreck all of the. It just, no. It just.
I love that. And I love the scene where at the end when Bruce Willis comes out and he, because it's has that element, too, but also has that family element where he needs someone in his life. He's just a lonely person who's living this kind of lonely, almost self-destructive life. And he falls in love with a switchboard operator.
Yeah.
And he gets a son. And when
he
catches them in that moment, and it's perfect. So yeah, it's a great, great. It's, probably, it's my favorite Wes Anderson film. I know you prefer the Life Aquatic.
Because I love the life is it's an adventure. Mm-hmm. I love that as a way of dealing with sorrow.
Okay.
As a way of dealing with, there's a lot of tragedy in life, but it's all part of it.
Sure. Yeah. And I would say Moonrise Kingdom has that element too, that there's a lot of tragedy in life, but there's people in your life for you. They're there.
Very good. I like that movie very much. My most romantic film, it sounds like I'm being a wise ass. I got two of them. First one is Die Hard. I think that's a very romantic movie about, you know, a couple that's having problems. Mm-hmm. And then he's doing all this basically out of love for her. And she's doing all of this out of love for him.
Yeah.
And because they know each other so well, they know what the other person will be doing. That's the kind of thing only a couple that's been together for a good long while would know.
Yeah.
Oh, no, he's not. Oh, this guy's in trouble because my husband, he would not be doing that.
Yeah.
And he knows she would be smart enough to be doing this, this, and this.
Yeah.
And then when they finally get together at the end, that's great. And why it's so stupid in later movies where they get a divorce. That's stupid.
Yeah, that's terrible.
Yeah, fuck off movies. Ooh. Wrong. And if you want to take away the sexual aspect to romance, I would say Hot Fuzz.
Okay.
You know,
that's a very
two people that find each other. Mm-hmm. And, you know, they always have that. You know,
they complete each other.
They complete each other in a way that was the same thing in Spaced, the TV series, where, you know, they'd occasionally say a little something to each other that you're like that couples would say, and it's in a joking way. But in this, they're definitely the person in the other one's life that has that kind of, I hate saying the word bromance, because it's putting the word bro into something to make it okay. but whatever they got, that's a thing.
Yeah.
And it's a really nice relationship to see. Mm-hmm. Best remake.
Well, I mentioned already, but The Thing to me is the best.
Sure.
I think it takes the germ of the story, but goes in its own direction and is an improvement on the original, which is a kind of a clunky film, even though it has Paul Frees, the great voice actor, can actually see his face acting in a movie, so it's kind of cool. But the remake is so great. And I would also say Invasion of the Body Snatchers as well, the remake by Philip Kaufman, is also a better film than the original film, even though the original film is very good.
I'm going to go with technically a sequel, but I call it a remake, Evil Dead 2. Because they redo a lot of scenes from the first one.
Okay.
And so I'd say that even though it's called 2, it's not really 2.
Okay.
It's a remake, and it's one of my favorite films. And just,
I
think it takes everything that's good in the first one. Except the one thing that it does that you could say is the first one is scarier. The first one is
it's
grittier and scarier. But I think the second one still has enough scares and jumps.
Sure.
But is just a great film. Okay. Most depressing.
Could I just say one more remake that I liked a lot? Mm-hmm. The Force Awakens. All right.
Very good. Most depressing.
I chose Army of Shadows, the Jean-Pierre Melville film about the French resistance during World War II. That film is unrelentingly grim in every way. And realistic, I think, to its story it's telling, which was that it really sucked to be under... sucked to be under the thumb of the Nazis during World War II. But also... it also makes reference to the fact that there the collaboration that went on as well. So it sucked that one, we were under the thumb of the Nazis, two, that we gave in so easily and quickly to that force and allowed ourselves to become a tool of Nazi Germany. It's a very good film though. It's very very emotional.
Okay. My most depressing is a recent one, and you brought it up already, Logan. Because I think it's one of those films that, much like a Terminator 3, an Alien 3, okay. Negates what's come before,
sure.
And makes it all pointless. And so again, here's the thing. Alien 3 isn't a badly done movie. Like for the type of movie that it is, you know, for Alien, there's an alien on a space prison. Yeah, it's fine.
Yeah.
It's okay. It's okay. There's some scenes that are all right. It's not as good as the other ones.
No.
You know, it's fine. But Logan actually is quite a well done film.
Yeah.
With some really good scenes in it.
Yeah.
But I think just the general premise and where they go just negates too much of what's come before, and it's a little too high a price to pay for me to for that film. I don't think that's where this series of films should end.
You resent Hugh Jackman for wanting to end playing Wolverine.
What else is he gonna do? More musicals?
Sure, why not? He's talented.
Yeah, of course he's going to do more musicals. Clearly he will. Most times seen, movie you've seen the most times.
Well, it's Barcelona, the Whit Stillman film, so we won't go any more into that. But not only have I seen it the most times, I've also read it the most times, because I have a Faber and Faber book of the scripts for Metropolitan and Barcelona.
Okay.
And I would read that over and over again, especially when I was working in parking lots. I would just bring that and just sit and read it. Because I could relive the movie in my head while I was reading it.
So if you're flipping and you see it on the TV, you will watch it till the end.
Barcelona?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Yeah. It's never on television, but if I happen to find it, I would definitely watch it.
This movie is always on television, and I will watch it to the end every time, which is Guardians of the Galaxy.
Okay.
It just, everything leads into, I go, well, I'll just watch a bit. And I watch the whole thing. Same thing with Scott Pilgrim. That's the second choice on that.
Yeah.
But Guardians,
I always say it's like my
favorite Star Wars movie after Star Wars.
Yeah, I've seen it. I've seen it enough now. I saw it in the theater three times, so that's enough.
All right. most visually striking film.
You want to see one?
You know what? This is an odd choice, but I would say because of the reactions in the theater, Shaun of the Dead. I thought the enormous groups of like I understand, you know, there's other zombie movies that have a lot of zombies,
yeah.
But I thought the mix of music with that, you know, really lifted everything up. Mm. And then the scene where the guy gets his stomach torn out got a reaction from the audience in a way that I have never seen.
Yeah.
That. But also the way it goes scene to scene, so crisp, moving, whip, whip, whip. Every shot was okay. Beautifully set up. And so it's not as much of like, wow, that's an amazing effect.
Yeah.
But as in shot for shot, beautiful, 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 and effective for what they're doing, I would say Shaun of the Dead.
Interesting. I took it as more of like how it looks as a movie, not...
Oh, you were wrong. That's
So I chose the whole Holy Mountain, the Alexander Jodorowsky film.
I have not seen that. Okay.
Just a... You know, for a movie that was made on, I assume, a pretty small budget, it has amazing set design and the look of it, the costumes, the fact that they create like a Roman Empire with frogs dressed. An invasion of the Aztec society by the Spanish the Spaniards using frogs dressed in costumes.
Oh, so they made all
these. Made all these frog costumes for this one little tiny scene in the movie.
I'm in.
There's like a whole room of Christ, like posed like he's being crucified. Just like all these paper mache Christ, like a room of about a million of them that the guy destroys. This great scene where he's like sort of crawl, like the thief is sort of crawling hands and knees through this room with like a rainbow painted along the wall, like in stripes, like rainbow stripes. There's so many like little touches like that that are just amazing in that movie. Like you're just like, whoa, how much money did they have? But it just feels like, you know, they just were able to get the most out of the least. It's also a really good movie as well.
Cool. And what's the name of the movie again?
The Holy Mountain.
Holy Mountain.
Yeah.
All right. Two more. Oh, my God. We're getting through it.
Yep.
We're going to be done soon. Movie people assume that you'd like.
You know what? I want to say it like this. Movie I assume that I'd like that I didn't enjoy.
Oh, okay. I'm still going to stick with the original because I care about what people wrote originally.
Okay.
All right. So what's the one that people that you thought you would not like that you liked?
I thought that I would like Django Unchained, and I did not like that film.
Okay.
I did not like that movie. I just felt...
You're pro-slavery.
It's not that I'm pro-slavery. I'm actually not in favor of it overall. You know, indentured servitude, I think, should have a comeback. But I just... found it a little, it was kind of forced. There's elements I like about it, but I found like the, I just didn't, yeah, I just found it a little.
Didn't hit your buttons.
It did not hit it. Yeah, it didn't hit any buttons.
Yeah,
for
if
me.
A Quentin Tarantino movie does not work for you, it really does not work for
yeah,
you.
Yeah, I think that's.
Yep, you either got to be on that ride or you're off that ride.
And I just, you know, there's, I mean, I enjoyed DiCaprio's performance. I thought he was very good in it. And the actor, the German actor who plays the dentist in the film, you know, he's always good in movies, but this film, I just didn't feel like anything was happening. And maybe he was sort of imitating a Leone film with having a sort of wandering movie. But I don't know. I just didn't have a big payoff that I enjoyed. I don't know. I just.
Fair enough. Movie people assume I'd like that I hate it. Can you guess what movie I hate?
But wait, which movie did you say that?
Nope. That's
oh, sorry. Yeah. Sorry.
So what I've mentioned the movie.
Logan.
No, okay. No, I did not hate it. This is a movie I actually hate, and I hate very few things.
Okay, what
but
movie
this movie I really hate, and I've mentioned on the show in the past.
Okay,
all right, Indiana Jones and the Temple of Doom.
You hate that film?
Oh, I out and out hate that film.
Oh wow,
I loathe that film.
Wow.
Yeah, it's I love Raiders of the Lost Ark.
Yep.
It's probably one of my favorite films of all time.
Mm-hmm.
I tolerate Crusade. You know, yeah, I know the next one, The Crystal Skull, is not good. I understand that. But this is just a reprehensible movie to me. It's so mean-spirited.
Yeah.
The woman is so dumb. all their cultures are gross and horrible, but ours.
Yeah.
You know, and the burning the guy alive so slow. That's just such one of the worst scenes I've ever seen in any movie. It's just awful, 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 and is not an Indiana Jones movie to me. Like, it starts interesting with the, you know, the rolling table, and it's like, oh, we're in, and then it just gets mean and dumb, and then it gets worse and worse, and then it's just, it's shitty. And then,
they like, do save that village of children.
They do, and they save the village, you know, by pushing the guy, sorry, I'm going to ruin it, because fuck this movie. You know, you kill the villains in the first movie, they open up the chest, the ark, and oh, that's a great, great ending. Oh my God, what amazing. How about this guy? Hey, push him off the thing and he falls. And what happens? We sort of see some alligators, maybe, but then it's not clear.
Yeah.
And then there's a bit of cloth and then a tiny bit of, there's a little bit of blood in the water.
Yeah.
It's like, dude, if you're going to be king of the gross outs early,
yeah,
commit to that shit. And when this guy falls off the thing, I want to see arms flying off. I want to see this for real. Don't go like, yeah, you get it, right? He's dead, right? Sort of. Yeah, it's fine. Maybe he's got killed. I don't know. Fuck off with that. You know, don't hedge your bets now. Deliver. No, no, big deal. And then we rescue the kids. At the end, everyone's
Well, you're making me feel bad. I don't think it's the greatest film ever, but I enjoy that movie.
Hate that movie more than any other movie. movie people would assume that you don't like that you liked.
A movie that I assumed I wouldn't like that I liked a lot was Jackass, the movie.
Mm.
I didn't know Jackass. I'd never seen the TV show because it wasn't available in Canada in a way that I could see at that time. And so I just rented it. I don't know why I rented it. The days when you could rent a movie, I think I had run out of films to rent. And so I was like, I guess I'll rent this movie. I've heard about it and I wonder what it is, so I'll rent it and see. And I love that movie.
Yeah.
I didn't love everything about it.
I saw it in theater, yeah. Mm. Well, yeah, the gross out eating things weren't...
I don't like the guy pooping in the toilet in a plumbing store.
He's eating pee. He's eating a pee snow cone. That's one of the things that's in the movie.
I don't remember that, but that's terrible too.
Yeah, it's pretty bad.
Like the stuff like that I don't really like, but I like when they're like injuring themselves in the roller disco truck or the guy's getting a tattoo going over a bunch of bumps.
Yeah, that's fantastic.
Thing.
That is clearly the best
I
scene
love the mousetrap
with Henry Rollins driving the van. Yeah.
I love the fact that they had the little hair clippers that they would like buzz people in parts during the film. And so he keeps seeing people with chunks of hair out of their hairs, you know, chunks of hair missing from their head at various points during the film. Like all those things are just fun. And once again, that it's that weird male dynamic of teasing and wanting to hurt each other, you know, but when I was a kid.
But laughing afterwards.
But laughing after when I was a kid, it was considered great fun for one person to take advantage of someone like relaxing on a couch to punch them in the nuts. And we just say sack attack and we just punch a guy right in the balls.
Yep.
It was so painful, but yet it seems so hilarious to us. And I would never do it now to someone. Oh, maybe it'd be kind of funny, but you know, I would, you know, it's just when you're kids, though, that just seems like the greatest thing in the world because you're just a bunch of dumb kids together. And it's just a weird,
They've tried to duplicate it many times. I mean, obviously, there's been two other movies.
Yeah.
But they've never been able to capture that. And I think it was better than the TV show by far, too.
Okay.
There was something about it that was just like, yeah.
They just seem to like
Night
Pandas.
Yeah, they're having fun.
Night Pandas is great.
Yeah, they're just goofing.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's fun.
Yeah.
And then they weren't able to do it again. And then they do stuff like TV shows where it's the same people, but we're going to be teasing animals and hopefully they'll attack us. Well, leave the animals out of this.
Yeah.
They don't need
this.
They
don't need you.
They don't need this in their lives.
But yeah, that first film is.
Crocodile hanging off your nuts. I don't need to see that. And the crocodile doesn't need it because he's not going to be able to eat your nuts. So, no.
And I really, I took it home and watched it, and I laughed so hard at that film, despite the fact that one whole side of my body was burned red by Lisa's disapproval of that film. Like, she did not like that movie at all. She was just like burning rays of like, and I took it, I watched it all, laughed my head off. Then I took it that night over to my friend's house, and we watched it together, and I just laughed even more. This is a film I didn't expect I'd ever like, but I do like it a lot.
Paper cut scene, it's really hard to watch.
I like that scene too.
Oh my God, it's so hard to watch.
Because once again, when
the audience was screaming.
But
screaming.
When your kids...
It's really, like, I would recommend if you ever get a chance to see that movie in a theater.
Yeah.
That is a good movie to see in a theater with a group
I can
of
see that. I can see that.
Movie people thought that I would hate that I like, because so many people I know dislike this movie, was Tomorrowland. I really enjoyed Tomorrowland.
Ugh.
So good.
Mm.
So good, that film. Yeah, just...
Why do you like it?
I liked the action. I liked... The exploring. I liked the two realities. I liked her like driving in a car, and like then when she's holding the thing, she sees, you know, the field. It just was really good imagination and very just really, really fun.
I did not. That movie just missed
its
mark
for me.
Top to bottom,
loved that film. Yeah.
It's interesting. Yeah.
And same with my wife. We both like afterwards we got the buttons, you know, and then.
But
like,
I think you're a Brad Bird acolyte.
Maybe.
So I have other friends who are like that. Like they like a director. It doesn't matter what movie that director makes.
Mm-hmm.
They just love it, and you're like,
well, if it's,
but it's
good
not
movie,
a great
like
movie,
Tomorrowland, then yeah,
but it's not
that's
a, but
why.
It's, but that's not a good movie.
Yeah,
so.
It is. Yeah, it's a good
no, it's
movie.
Not a good movie at all.
You didn't get it. That's fine.
No,
you didn't
I did get it.
You're
I saw
one,
it.
No, you're not one of the chosen people who understands.
I saw that movie.
Nope.
I saw it.
Maybe I'm one of the special ones who gets it. That's fine.
I think you're special, right, for liking it.
No, it's fine. If you don't get it, that's all right. I mean. I don't pity you. I mean, you've got other things
I
in your life,
advise
so
it's you
fine.
To. I wouldn't advise you to from your rather rocky.
Why don't you marry Whit Stillman? You love him so much.
I do.
There you go. All right, that brings us to. We ended on a sad note.
We
see,
did.
We were friends through the whole thing, and then at the end, we're all fighting. And we're sad, and the other thing. Oh no, the goldfish fell on the ground.
No.
Oh, he's
can
gone.
Still save him.
No, I can't.
This laying there.
No, he's got
around.
A do not resuscitate note right next to him.
He does have the DNR because we didn't mention this because of his cigar smoking. He has stage 4 cancer. It really is kind of sad. Poor Fishy Goldman. Is that his
What's
name?
That? Yeah, it's Fishy Goldman.
Fishy
yeah,
Goldman.
That's right. I got to get a new agent. So, hey, if you want to,
listen, it couldn't be any worse than it. Because really,
yeah, he's really
you're
hanging
doing,
in there.
You're doing
he's just
this show.
Around.
That's how low your career is.
Yeah,
falling.
That's right. Oh, who just walked in the room? Hey, Boobs McGee, how you
doing?
Hey, oh, we stepped on Fish and Goldman. You know what? That was a bit of a mercy.
Boobs, get out of here. I love you, but I can't.
Once again, you're
I
watching
can't look
him
at
leave.
You. I
you're
can't.
Watching him leave. That's the best.
See ya.
Okay. So
he's going down to the dance party that was going on in the other end of the building.
If you feel like writing us, and why would you? We're at our website is sneakydragon.com, and we have a message board there.
Hey, please send more of your. I'll try and post it again on the website so you can do an easy copy and write. And yeah, it was fantastic to get everyone's get your list. I love the people that wrote. I like left the porn blank as if they've never seen it. Come on, guys, let's be honest. You've seen at least one, and if you've seen one, it's your favorite.
I think you've seen them all.
That's true. That also is true.
All right. By the way, I know we're getting near the end, but it sounds like we may have a vehicle going by.
Yep,
if you can guess the siren.
There it goes.
What would you say? Fire truck? Police? Ambulance? 1, 2, 3. Ambulance.
Ambulance.
Very good. Leave us a little message on there. We like to hear from you there. If you prefer doing email, we're at sneakyd@sneakydragon.com. sneakyd@sneakydragon.com. We are on Twitter @sneaky_dragon. We're on Facebook, Sneaky Dragon. Tumblr, sneakydragon.tumblr.com. And we've got a couple of things still going on. One, we're going to be taking some people to White Spot for a dinner or a lunch. If you're interested in that, the only thing you do, write us. Say you are. And then we'll figure that out in the future when I got my act together. We also have a thing going on where if you want to have Dave do a soundtrack to a story that you want to tell us, Dave will do that. Here's how that works. The theme that we've got is the one that got away. What does that mean? Could be a job, could be a love, could be anything, could be a fish.
Yep.
We don't care. As long as it's under 2 minutes in length, you can either give us an MP3 and send it to SneakyD at
Could be Brad Bird and his Tomorrowland project.
There you go. SneakyD at SneakyDragon.com. You can send us that. Or you can go to our Skype page and just go to Skype and Sneaky Dragon. Look for our logo next to the Sneaky Dragon and leave us a message on there. And that would be good as well. And then what will happen is afterwards, Dave will listen to your story. He will then come up with some songs that will go along with that story. Yeah. He's done that now for his wife, Lisa. He has done for our friend, Louise.
Yeah.
Both great stories. Can you top those stories? Challenge given.
Challenge given.
Challenge given.
Yeah.
All right. I think that brings us pretty close to an end. Again, we do love to hear from you, so please contact us. This has been a very long episode, so we're going to end it then, and we'll be back next week.
Okay.
It's almost next week now.
I'm still in shock about this whole Tomorrowland thing. I know that you don't like Temple of Doom.
Yeah,
you know,
it's
that's
the
fine.
Worst film ever.
It's not the worst film ever.
It betrayed
there
everything.
There are many,
the first one.
Many
the
other
worst.
Films that are terrible.
No, but Tomorrowland is fine.
Tomorrowland
listen,
is not
guys,
a good movie.
Why don't you, everyone not, out there, watch both those movies. Let us know what you think.
It doesn't make any sense as a
to
movie.
You? That's too bad. All right, so.
You know what's a better film that has a world overlaid on another world is Midnight Express. I really like that movie.
A completely different movie I have not seen yet, but I have got on DVR, so I'll watch that. Whether it's a better movie or not, I like to Tomorrowland. Anyway,
did you say PVR or DVR?
They're both the same.
PVR is the correct term.
See, we are ending on a negative note. And what will be the right one? Let us know.
If only Fishy Goldman were here to tell us.
Yeah, I got to clean that up.
What a
All
mess.
Right, thanks for listening, folks. Bye.
Bye, y'all. Thank you, Johnny.